This is an interview with James Lackey for the California State College Bakersfield California Odyssey Project by Stacy Jagels at 2619 Verdugo Lane, Bakersfield, California, on Tuesday, March 31st, 1981 at 10:30 a.m. I thought we'd start first with when and where you were born.
Born in Hartshorn, Oklahoma. January 30th, 1914.
Could you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Well, there was 10 of us kids here, and we all went through high school. And then me and my older, well, most of us, several of us went through college. I was quite an athlete, and me and my brother, older brother, we got a scholarship to go to college. So I played football in college, and he did too. And that's where we got to go to school. Of course, I went 2 years, and then I got my leg hurt, and that was the end of my football. So we messed around there and couldn't get a job after we got out of school. Well, he did. He got a superintendent of a school back there. And then a little later on, I went to work. I worked the coal mines when I was 13 years old. Hmm. Age didn't mean nothing then. I worked on top. Made four. That was in 27. I made $4.36 a day. And that was more than I made when I come out here in the 30s. And then the coal mine shut down in 29. Well, that tore Rock Island. That you went to from coal to diesel, see. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't have anything to do. My dad had a little farm, didn't make nothing, work for the county. Then the WPA come along. He got on WPA, and then.
Why don't we go back just a little bit to when you were a very small boy? You see, your father had a farm.
Yeah. And then we worked at the coal mines to get by, and he farmed it. Now we get oil money from there, from this farm. When he sold it, my mother kept the mineral rights, so all of us kids get money from the oil. Mm-hmm. Not much, but a little.
Uh-huh. Do you remember much about the farm?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had mules and horses, cows, and raised hogs and chickens, you know, and everything. Everything you'd have with the farm, we had it. But when things got rough and during the Depression, 29, well, everything went boom, and that was it. We had to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about when you were living on the farm? Do you remember how large it was? How many acres?
Well, we had 80 acres.
Uh-huh.
Had 80 acres. And then we things got rough. We sold part of that, and we bought another one and sold it and bought another one. Finally, when everything was over, we had 40 acres. When they come out here, that's all they had left was 40 acres. But most of our kids up in the 30s had started moving on, you know, and that's when me and my brother come out here and started a migration. And then we'd go back. We work at the Georgia, and then in the, between the grapes, you know, season, we'd head back to Oakey and bring some more out. And that's where all these, yeah, my kinfolk out here have come out since we have, uh-huh, in the 40s.
Well, how about when you were a little boy back in Oklahoma living on the farm? Do you remember doing a lot of chores?
Oh, we had each one, I would tend to the horses. Some of them would tend to the cows, the chickens. Each one had his own special thing to do. I never milked a cow in my life, and I was born, I couldn't. My mother sent me out to milk cows one day, and I couldn't get any milk, and I threw the bucket away. And that was the last time I ever tried to milk. Mm-hmm. And I tend to the horses. Some would tend to the hogs. Some would milk. Each one had his own thing to do. Nobody messed with the other one.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
9. There was 10 of us kids. I showed you there a while ago. Okay. There are. There's 10 kids.
Mm-hmm. And whereabouts are you in that line? Are you in the middle or near the oldest or what?
What was that?
How old are you in relation to your other brothers and sisters?
I'm the second. And they're all 2 years apart. Well, there's one set of twins, Arl and Arlene. Mm-hmm. There's 8 of us still living. My older brother, one that come out with me, he had a pipeline construction company in Taft for 20 years, J.C. Lackey Construction, and I was superintendent. That's where we worked. We had an office in Bakersfield and one in Long Beach, Signal Hill, and one in Taft. And that's what I worked at in pipeline construction nearly all my life since I worked at the Georgia. You know, when the war started, I quit and went to defense in Long Beach in the shipyards. In 41, that's when I left to Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about your parents? Were they born and raised in Oklahoma, or did they migrate to Oklahoma?
They come in through there. My mother's born in Arkansas, and my dad in Mississippi. They come up through there and migrated in covered wagon up through in Oklahoma, and they settled right there around Horchon, homesteaded. And that's where my grandfather, well, that's his picture I showed you there a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was taken in 18. That's the old homestead place right there back of Bell Star Mountain. And that's how many they were then in 18, and you can just figure all these that's come out here since. So it was 10 of us there, and when in the 30s it got rough. So we just started.
Do you remember much about the farmhouse you lived in when you were a small boy?
Oh, yeah.
How large it was?
It was, it was about 4 or 5 to each room. And we didn't have any phone, no running water. In fact, I didn't talk to her on a phone until I was up in high school. We didn't have electricity, no running water, had a well. And take a bath in the wash tub every Friday night, usually. That was the way. Oh, yeah, I tell you. That's the way it was there. And then, just like I say, each one had his own thing to do, and that was it. My dad had a old Model T, and I started driving when I was 13. We lived about 2.5 miles out of town, and I drove my mother to town one day, and she wouldn't ride back with me. It was raining, and I passed her on the way, and she was scared to get in with me. She walked all the way home. Well, you couldn't get out of the road. The ruts was that deep. Just put it in there and open it up. It would go. That's the way I had it figured. And
did your mother work
on the farm? Oh, she'd get up at 4.
Housework.
Oh, she'd get up there and go out and chop cotton with us, work in the field all day long, come back and cook at night. I don't see how she made it. Hardest working woman I ever seen. What if she hadn't? We wouldn't have got by.
Mm-hmm.
She'd get up there at 4 o'clock and cook, and we'd go out in the field and work all day long. Maybe and she'd come in and cook at night.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way she was. And then the farming got bad. We went to work around the coal mines, you know, got by and made money that way.
Do you remember what crops besides cotton?
Oh, we'd raise corn, a lot of corn, and then raise watermelons and stuff like that to sell.
Uh-huh.
And I'd get on a horse and take a sack of corn up to town, to grist mill, and get it ground up for cornmeal, see? That's where we got our cornmeal. I think he would take a third of it when he ground it up for his part. And that's the way we got our cornmeal, and we raised our hogs and eggs and stuff like that. We didn't have to buy too much.
Well, you should say he would be a miller that ground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had his own business up there, and then Mom would make her own clothes out of corn sacks, or, you know, flour sacks. You'd go to town, you'd buy and get them. She made a lot of her clothes like that.
Mm-hmm. Did your father own this farm?
Oh, yeah, he owned it. Oh, no, he bought it. He bought it. Yeah, it was right there by my grandfather's place. They, all of them just bought right around in there, and, you know, just a close-knit family.
Mm-hmm.
Till the Depression hit, and then here we started.
So you had your relatives right near around you. Was your family very important then? Did you get together often?
Oh, yeah, just like that one right there. We got together all the time. Oh, we do here. I was president of this one last year. And I had a heck of a time locating some of my cousins. In fact, I found one up in Minnesota. Uncle Robert's boy, the preacher, his boy. I found him up in Minnesota. He's Northwest Oriental Airline pilot. Hadn't heard, in fact, haven't seen him in years. And I just finally went to a high school reunion 2 years ago in Oklahoma. There was 900 at this high school reunion. And I seen some folks there, and I started talking to him, and he didn't know where he was either. And then I wrote a letter to Florida and talked to a woman, and she gave me a phone number, and I dialed it, and there he answered.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so he's coming out. The next one will be June the 28th, and he will be out here.
Mm-hmm. But when you were in Oklahoma as a child and all your relatives lived around you, do you remember having much contact with other families, other friends, or did you mostly just associate with...
Oh, no, everybody. You knew everybody for miles around. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Anywhere in there, the whole neighborhood you knew. You knew where everybody lived, and you spoke to everybody and everything. Every Saturday night, everybody go to town. You'd see them sitting up on the street, guys up there whittling, smoking cigars, and that was it. Saturday night was the main, you worked all the time, but Saturday night was your night. Sunday, we had to go to Sunday school. Of course, I didn't learn a lot, but I had to go.
Mm-hmm. When you worked in the field, you probably did this some before school and after school, maybe on weekends. Did you ever have to stay out of school
in harvest? They would let school out. They would let school out during the harvest time. Or they'd shut the school down for a couple of weeks till you harvest. Mm-hmm. They still do back in there. Still doing a lot of places in harvest. Oh, yeah, and in our field there, Rock Island Mines, I could be working out in the field and I could hear them dynamiting underneath you. The mines, tunnel would come in under our field there. Since we've left, though, they've hit oil there, or a gas well, and that's where we get our money. It's right there at the edge of our field. Mm-hmm. We'd have had that when we was there, we wouldn't have had to left.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That's a heck of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember if you considered the work you did as very hard or strenuous work, or did you just take it for granted?
We took it for granted because I was strong and young then. Mm-hmm. Didn't bother me. I worked the coal mines 13 years old, just like a man. 30, 40 years old. Had to. And then all my brothers, we'd work there to work on. I didn't work inside. I worked on top. Because I was too young to go inside. But anyway, they gave me a job. I made the same wages as get $5 down underneath and $4.36 on top, so there wasn't that much difference.
What did you do?
Just worked around there, clean up around the mines, anything to do there.
Whatever
on top.
They told you to do.
Oh, yeah. I was 13 years old, and you can just see. And we had to take a first aid course from the Bureau of Mines. I still got my certificate somewhere. We had to take that course, you know, in case somebody got hurt. You had to splinter them up, you know, mm-hmm. and things like that. Well, I got my certificate here somewhere when I was 13 years old. I passed that. We took it in a hospital basement back there in the Hartshorn where I lived.
And then the rest of your relatives also worked here. You said your brothers.
Oh, yeah. My brothers did. Oh, yeah. They would work. Well, let's see. No, they shut down. No, they didn't work there. Just me and my two older brothers worked there because mine shut down. And when the boom hit, Depression, 29, Rock Island shut down. So nothing to do. Mm-hmm. Dad went on WPA, and then I went to the CC camps, mm-hmm. and I got $5 a month, and they sent 25 home.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember if the work at the mine was very strenuous work as compared to your farm work?
I don't think it was for me, because mm-hmm. I was real strong and athletic, and it didn't faze me at all. And farm work is just steady old pace, you know, out there. Now, out at the Georgia, I was out picking grapes when we first got on there, and then the foreman found out that me and my brother went to school and college and were probably a little smarter than some of the Okies, you know. Not that I'm bragging or anything. Then they brought us in a packing house, and we started tallying the fruit, you know. When they load it in the cars, you have to keep record and tally, and every kind of grape would come in. So we got a job that, and it was in refrigerated cars. That was a good job. And then I didn't think I was making enough money, and so I went to loading cars that paid 40 cents an hour, mm-hmm. instead of 25.
When you were talking about the coal mines a minute ago, you said you made $4.36
an hour. That's a day.
A day.
Yeah.
Okay. And then a couple of your brothers worked. Before 1929, when the crash came, you had, it sounds like you might have had a little bit more money. Were you very well off as compared to your other relatives or other friends that lived in the community?
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, we got along good then till then, but then when things hit, you know, well, oh, yeah, we all of us, each one get a job in the summer, and that's what we done there.
Mm-hmm. And but, you had enough, more than enough for food and clothing?
Oh, yeah.
Money
yeah.
for extras if you wanted to go
yeah.
into town?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'd go to town Saturday night. That was town. Everybody would go to town. Yes, ma'am, we got by real good then. Mm-hmm. But when things hit like that, it was rough.
Could you tell me a little bit about school, whether you liked school or...
Oh, I never missed a day, and I went 4 years to high school and never missed a day. Oh, I loved school to keep them working. Oh, they didn't have to force none of us kids to go to school, because if you didn't go to school, you had to work. And so, man, I went 4 years to high school, and I wasn't late or missed a day, and I lived 2.5 miles out of town. So you can just figure...
You walked then?
Oh, yeah, but the last year they put a bus in. We rode a bus to school, but I couldn't ride it home because I played football and I'd have to practice after school. So after school, I'd have to walk home. So that's the way me and my brother went to college, because we were football players, see.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Eastern Oklahoma A&M there.
What kind of a school did you go to when you were young? Was this sort of a
little? There was a little grade school down in the corner of our field. It took 2.5 acres. We had 40 acres. Well, we had 38 because the school took 2 acres of it for the school. They had a little old one. They had two teachers. One teacher would teach 4 or 5 grades, you know. And Millie Bradley was my first teacher, and I'll never forget it. And I was real bashful when I went to school. I'd crawl under the desk, scare them, and they didn't even know I was at school for a long time. I was scared to death. Finally, I got over that shyness, you know. And we had basketball courts. We'd had played basketball there. It just an old one, two-room country school is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my brothers and sisters went to that one school. And we all went to high. Well, now Grace, my one that works for Younger, she smaller ones graduated out here,
mm-hmm.
because in 38 when my father, me and my brother was already out here, and my father just sold a farm, kept the mental rights, bought an old truck. He brought the whole bunch out to Arvin, come out there and stayed. I had a 2 little room house, $3 a month is all they charge us for rent. And they stayed there till they could, I got them all jobs there at Georgia. And they started to.
Mm-hmm. How about when you went to high school back in Oklahoma? Did you go to a very large school? You said it was large enough to have a football team.
Oh, we was undefeated in our football, but we had a championship team, Choctaw Conference, they call it. And, they was, big. There was 45 in my graduation class, and probably there would be freshmen, there'd be about 70 start. And when they get up senior year, there's your dropouts. So, this high school reunion I went to year before last, in fact, they're going to have another next year, I'll go back then, but that was the time the school was built. Up to the present date, that was for everybody. See, that's why they had 900. They come from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine was in Venezuela, come up there. They just come from everywhere. And I've seen people there that I hadn't seen in 40, 50 years. It was really something.
You said after high school you went to college for a couple of years.
What was that?
You went to college for a couple of years?
2 years.
After high school? Where was that?
Wilburton, Eastern Oklahoma A&M College. We couldn't have went, but I had a scholarship. And the coach got me a job working in a restaurant for my meals. Then we slept in the fire station at night. And every time they had a fire, we got $3 for making this run. Maybe you fight fire all day, but anyway, it paid $3. And man, you didn't want to miss it. A lot of times, whistle would blow, and I'd jump out of that bunk and just catch the back end of that truck because you wanted that $3. I didn't get nothing for working the restaurant, just my meals. I'd have to open up 4 o'clock in the morning to feed the railroad men when they'd come through, Rock Island Railroad. And that was the way I went to college. And my brother, he fired the boilers at the girls' dormitory. He had a good job. That was his job. And we both slept at the fire station, but when they had a fire, man, we got $3 every time we fought a fire. Coach got us a job and everything in this for playing football. That was our scholarship, and we got free tuition. So really, we wasn't out nothing but what little clothes we had. Then we'd probably go home maybe every 2 weeks, you know, take our clothes home, mother'd wash them, clean them up, and we'd head back, and then we'd take trips and on football, maybe be gone for 2 or 3 days, you know, that didn't play too far, maybe you'd go a couple of 100 miles, 300.
Do you remember your classes that you took at college, whether you enjoyed going to college or?
Oh yeah, they was, I had a 5-year state teacher certificate, that's what I got out of 2 years of college. And my brother was superintendent, he got eventually superintendent of a school back there before we come out here, but it didn't, $125 a month, I think, is what he got. So it was when I got out, see, I finished college in 34. It was rough to get a job. So I went, that's where I went to CC camps.
You were well educated as compared to most of the other
During that time, I would say we was. But of course, over the time, you forget a lot. And like I can look back on my teachers now, and I don't think they're as smart as these 8th grade kids now. Just when, since I look back, you know, they were smart for their time, yeah, but God, things have advanced so far since then, it's pitiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Grant's not the smartest.
But did you feel, at the time, do you think you felt fortunate that you had this scholarship and you were able
to get definitely. In fact, when I got out of high school, in 32, I didn't know I was going to get this scholarship. Me and my brother caught a freight train, come out to Arvin and tried to get a job in 32. I was right out of high school, and we couldn't get a job. We slept under the trees out there and went down to Arvin to the bakery, and I'd bum old Joe Lomergid run a bakery in Arvin in 32. I'd bum stuff from him to eat, secondhand stuff, you know, if they didn't sell a day. And then he'd put us back in the garden pulling weeds for our eats. Slept under trees, take a bath in the canal. And that was in 32, and we couldn't get a job. We had some friends that was working there, neighbors. That's how come us to come out. And they was living in a bunkhouse, and they would steal us sandwiches and bring to us of the evening where we was at. Oh, I tell you, it was rough then.
And you went back to Oklahoma.
Went back then.
Unable to find a job then.
We couldn't get a job here, so we went back and went to school.
You went to school again.
Well, that was in 32. We stayed out here.
Oh, then you went to college.
Went back to Oklahoma after we'd write letters to my mother, you know. And then she told me that we had a scholarship, so we went back, both of us did, and went home, and then we went to school for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated high school in 32 and just finished college in 34. Couldn't find nothing in. That's when I went to CC camps.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit more about Oklahoma? You mentioned the Baptist Church earlier when we were talking. I take it then that your family was religious.
Oh, all of them was just Southern Baptist. All of them was Southern Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my dad, like I told you, built the church in Lamont in 38 or 9. In fact, he put up a tent when he first came out here and started church.
Mm-hmm. So when you were back in Oklahoma, it was important that you go to church every
Everybody
Sunday.
Went to church. Yes, ma'am. All the family was church members.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was baptized, I guess I was 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
You went to the Catholic, the dad,
Baptist. Do you remember revivals?
They all had revivals. Two of my uncles was preachers back there. And Uncle Robert, the one here, and then Uncle Emmett. Well, Uncle Emmett built a church right over here, one block. And he was a minister back there. I think he's the one that baptized me. They'd baptize you out in the ponds, you know. All of them, like our mines, had water ponds there to get their water. And so they just had the baptizing right out in there. And we had to go to church. That was a must on Sunday.
Do you remember much about the revivals, what they were like?
Oh yeah, they would ministers would just have them in any church, you know. They would even have the holy rollers would come there. We used to go up to those that have tents, put up a big tent, and that's where they'd hold. They just move from town to town, and that's where the holy rollers did. They had a big tent put up, and people, you know, you've been to. To churches,
well,
surely.
But the Baptist church would they would get another minister would come to help hold the revival, not minister of the church. They'd have another.
Well, they still do that.
Yeah.
When they have revivals, they always bring in another minister.
Mm-hmm. And then it would last a week.
Do you remember if you enjoyed it?
Well, we had to. I always was a little rowdy, and I liked to play, so I really didn't care too much for church. But I went because my mm-hmm. dad made me. Mm-hmm. And no, as far as enjoying it, I was going to be out playing. That was the way I was.
Yeah. How about activities in the church? I've heard that the church is kind of a social gathering place, right. Too, as well as, you know, a place of worship.
Oh, they had, they always had their socials, and then had big pie suppers. That's the way they raised their money. Box suppers, they'd go, your girl or your mother or sisters would take the pies, and then the men would buy them. They'd bid. You'd always try to bid against somebody who had a sweet girl there so you could eat with this girl, see? And you just bid it up, and that raised the price up, and that's the way things would go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have churches that was always a gathering place for the community. Everybody seemed to go to church. It was just a must then, that was all.
Well, it was only an activity to do.
Well, yeah, and then parties at night.
What other activities were there besides church?
Parties, someone would have, and invite everybody.
Parties at homes. They'd have parties at home where you play Ring Around a Rosie and that kind of things, you know. It just, different things.
Was there ever much leisure time left in the evenings after all the work? And
Saturday nights, that was it. Saturday nights was a big night. For everybody, it was go to town Saturday night, and then you could always look forward to the 4th of July. Had the whole town shut down, had big picnics. In fact, I went back 2 or 3 years ago to the picnic they still had there. 1976, wasn't it? I think that was the 200th year of our nation. And I got my trailer house there, and I just hook onto it, and we just take off. I've belonged to Thousand Trail Club now, you know, and we just close up here and take off. Well, it was easy while a young boy was home. He's 20, but he moved out and bought him a house, and now we got nobody to tend to the place when we leave.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the land where you lived. Now, is this in eastern Oklahoma?
Southeastern part.
Could you describe to me what the land is like, whether it's rolling hills and trees, whether this was a pretty...
Well, it was flat, and there was creeks run all, maybe creeks that run down through there where we'd go fishing every night. Where we farmed, it was flat there. There was trees all around. There was little mountain. I thought there was big mountains in, but since I come out here, they're just little hills. They're Bell Star Mountain where my grandfather settled. Well, golly, I thought that was something, but it ain't even just a rolling hill. It was mostly flat country where we lived, and then the Rock Island Mines there, and they got the coal and everything out. They had big shale, and that's what they'd put on the road to surface the road with. This shale that would come out of the mines. After it would burn, it made red shale, and they would put that on the road. My dad used to tend to the road a lot, worked for the county, and he made money that way, see, when they couldn't make nothing on the farm. The farm in oil, everybody had little farms, maybe 40, 50, 60 acres. One time, I think we had, biggest we had was 80. And then he, things got rough, he'd sell some of it and build a house on another part. But if he would have kept the mineral rights, he only kept mineral rights on the one when he come out here. 40, well, it was 38 acres because the school took two of it. And he only kept mineral rights. If he'd kept mineral rights on all of them, we'd have been pretty well off.
Do you have very happy memories of your childhood, Uncle?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We had that. There was always something for us to do, hunting and fishing. My dad had... maybe we'd get the work done, he'd load us in a wagon, we'd go down on a creek, maybe stay all night, fish, and we got a lot of fish out of it. And then we'd had coon dogs. I'd go hunt possums with my dad, and then we had rabbit dogs. I'd go down the bottoms where the creek run, take these dogs and jump a rabbit. Well, I'd bring rabbits home to eat. That's the way we got by. It was, I tell you, with 10 kids, we had to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we was all of us was home at one time. Till me and my older brother just started, couldn't get by there and just finally had to leave.
We were talking earlier about when you worked on the farm and you had 9 brothers and sisters. So they helped out with the farm work, but did your father ever have occasion to hire other hands to come in when there was
no? We did it all ourselves.
You did it all yourself.
Oh yeah, they was. In fact, we didn't have any money to hire anybody. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. No, we did it all ourselves. We raised watermelons, cantaloupes, a lot of things to sell. You know, he would peddle them in a wagon, go around town, go uptown park, and take them all around, sell them to the stores. That's the way we. Mm-hmm. We got by.
I've talked to some people who said when times got very hard and there was no cash, sometimes they had products, they had eggs, they had meat or whatever, they didn't have the cash, that sometimes they bartered with their neighbors. They would give them eggs and the neighbor might...
Well, that's the way my mother bartered for me. Cash. She gave the doctor some chickens and things when
uh-huh.
I was born. Yeah, he'd come out there in a buggy. And I was born in January. Mama said it was a snowing like everything. And he was out there covering his horse up and he kept hollering, come on in, come on in. And when he got in there, I was already born. Yeah, they give him, that's what they did. They give him chicken. We'd take eggs to town and trade it to the store for different items. Just like
that was a very common thing.
Oh, everybody did that. And then they would sell them to people that didn't have them, see. You'd get flour, sugar, things that you couldn't raise at home.
Mm-hmm.
Corn meal, we raised that, and a lot of things, berries, peaches, and meats, we had all that. You just had to get your things like sugar, maybe salt, and flour. That's about all you'd buy, because or trade, you'd barter for it,
mm-hmm.
things you would raise.
Did you ever trade labor, perhaps with a relative or a neighbor that needed a little bit of help?
Well, when they combine season, if they had oats or anything like that, we'd go over and work in their field, and then they would come trade with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way, no money involved,
mm-hmm.
because there was no, we didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way we did. Well, I've worked in a lot of different people's fields. In fact, if they paid you, it was, I think we got $1 a day and one meal. That's what we got for working on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 10 hours a day. It wasn't just going out there. It was, you worked, and then you'd take off an hour for mealtime. They'd feed you. And then you'd lay around and rest a little bit before you go back to that old hot field.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, boy, I was glad to get out of there. I don't know. But still, ever since I've been here, I've had a yearning to go back. I don't know why. In fact, I'd like to just sell out tomorrow and go back. In fact, her brother caught a bus last week and went back. Her brother and wife caught a Greyhound bus right here to go back and visit. lives in Oildale. That's where most of the Okies settled, you know. In Bakersfield, it was in Oildale.
Yeah. Do you remember ever seeing tractors on the land then?
Do I remember what?
Seeing tractors
on
the farms.
Oh, they had a steam tractor that pulled the combines. That was all I ever
seen. Was that very common? Or did most people...
No, they would come in out of Kansas. They travel from state to state. They'd start in a harvest up north, and then they would come right on down, and just the regular crew would work with it. In fact, there was one part-time by our old school that broke down, and it just stayed there for, stayed there for 20 years, right outside on the side of the road there, by the school. Big old steam that pulled the combines. There was crews that would just go through and do that, and then you'd go from field to field and help them, you know, till they'd move on out of the county and then go somewhere else. That was the only tractors that I ever seen. You know, that's fact. It's the only one I ever seen. And it, when it broke down there, it stayed there. But that school, us kids played on that. It's, I know it was there for 20 years or longer.
In 1929, you said that where you worked at the coal mines had to close. That was shut down.
Yeah, it shut down in, when the railroads went to diesel. See, Rock Island owned those coal mines. Three big coal mines are that everybody in that town had little farms, and they'd farm and then worked the coal mines. And when it shut down, that town just went to...
What happened to your family's finances? How did that hurt your particular family?
Well, you mean us? Uh-huh. Well, that's when the WPA and things started. Roosevelt got in, and he started the WPA and... It's works progress, and then he started the CC camps. I went to that. I built trails in Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. They shipped me to Cheyenne, Wyoming first, and I was up there. Only got $5 a month, and they sent 25 home.
When was that? What year was that?
That was 35.
Before these programs were started, and before you went to the CCC and your father got in with the WPA, there must have been a period of time where you had very little work or no work, and things were very rough. Is that right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. See, Roosevelt didn't get in until 32. None of them started till, 33, 4, 5?
Right.
And 29's when everything, banks and everything went busted. Everybody back in there had a little money, you know. From working to mines, they had it in the bank. They just lost everything. And then from 29 on until Roosevelt, well, Hoover was in. That turned me against Republicans. You may be Republican, probably are, I don't know. But I'm the hard-headedest Democrat you ever seen in your life. That ruined me, that Hoover. He liked to starve us all to death. It was rough from when he got in. Well, he got in 28. He only served one term. And then Roosevelt got in. Well, things started picking up. They come in there and they bought the cattle. Yeah, well, I was telling you about that though, and they shoot them. They all gathered in our lot there. We had a big lot, and people from all the neighborhood would bring their cattle in there. And the government, I give you $5 for that one. I give you 10 for that one. I give you 20 for that one. Well, if you didn't want it, you didn't have to. But they were starving to death anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd shoot them. Well, I would skin them. I had me a blocking tackle. I would skin them. I'd get a dollar for the hides. And I'd take them up to town, and I'd sell them. That was the way I got my money. And if you want, you got to keep the meat. They just give you, the government just give you that. You kill them, and then the whole neighborhood would come and get the meat. And then they would can it. They had this canning factory. They'd can a lot of it. My mother canned a lot of it. And when they'd shoot these cattle, well, anybody that wanted them could have them. Even the government bought them for me, you know. And people come from all around and didn't have cattle. Well, they'd take them, but I kept the hides myself because I'd get a buck out of them. And that was a lot of money for me then.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the cattle that way. Well, I forget how many we had shot. You just starving to death. They'd have certain areas the government would say, well, you bring them to this place. Well, our place was a headquarters where they brought them from the whole neighborhood. And I forget how many we had shot, we just couldn't support them.
How about pigs? Did they do that with the pigs too? Hogs?
Seemed like they did. Now, I'm not too up on that, but I think they did the hogs that way too.
Pigs, though, honey.
Huh?
People didn't have that many pigs.
No, you just had enough cattle for your own use, but you had more cattle, you know.
How did you feel about that? Did you feel that was wrong?
Oh, we was happy.
Oh,
glad to get the money. Oh, definitely. It took me death because I had a block and tackle there. I'd jerk them things up there and skin them. That was a buck to me. That was a lot of money. Mm-hmm.
Some people have said that the government had the cattle shot and then burned them and wouldn't allow anyone to eat the meat. Did you ever hear of that happening at another
Where I was. In fact, even the colored people would bring pans over there and get the blood. Make blood pudding. And we didn't, but I've seen a lot of colored people lived over across the hill from us, and they would bring pans over there, and when they shoot them, would stick them, you know, to let them bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And the colored people would get the blood and make blood pudding.
But in your case, all this meat was eaten?
Oh, definitely.
Or
canned? No, if the government shot it, anybody could get it. They give it to the, that was to help the people.
Mm-hmm.
See, you've been.
It sounds like that program did help your family.
It did mine, I'll tell you for sure, because they would have died anyway. We just couldn't feed them.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely right. Because
mm-hmm.
I made money by skinning them hides and taking them up to McAllister.
That would have died anyway.
And my dad got money for the having them shot, and then we got the meat. So it helped us three ways.
Right. How about plowing under crops or not planting crops? I've heard that the government had a special program where they actually paid farmers.
Now, I think that was a way later, wasn't it?
That may have been 37, somewhere around there. I just
that must have been after.
Heard about that from your family.
No, we wasn't in on any of that. Because my folks left in 38, and that must have come, they definitely did, I know that. I've read about that, but that happened after we left.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have any personal experience?
We wasn't in on that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Everything we planted, we had to.
We were just talking about when Hoover was president, 1928 to 1932, and at that time, your family was not doing well at all. Could you give me some idea about how bad things were, whether you did go hungry every day?
Well, I tell you, I have sat down to eat. We had biscuits and gravy. A lot of times that was our meal.
Mm-hmm.
And dinner, for supper, cornbread and sweet milk, and I still love it. That was our meal at supper. We had a long table, there'd be 10 of us kids there. Well, it wasn't all born then either. Let's see, my younger brother was born in 34. So, well, it was along in there.
Still a lot of kids.
Still, yeah. Younger John was born in 34. And a lot of time, yeah, of course we had stuff to eat, but we raised it. But a lot of times I've sat down just biscuits and gravy is all we had. Maybe it wasn't time to kill a hog. Or a cow, you know, or something like that.
And so there certainly wasn't money for anything else.
Oh, you didn't have any luxuries at all. Oh, definitely not. That was out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Just essential.
Was just about everybody else that you knew in the same situation?
Yes.
Everybody.
Yeah.
That's where they left. They were in my neighborhood, in the county where I was. I didn't know about the rest of the state, but where I lived, they had to get out of there. In fact, you can just see all my cousins that's come out here since I have, and they come out in their 30s.
You mentioned that Hoover turned you against
Republicans.
Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well,
the specific things
it's just, I figure he was for the wealthy people, and I didn't have anything, and that's why I was that away. Of course, I guess I'm wrong. But to tell you the truth, I have never voted Republican in my life. Well, I'll take it back. I voted for Trice Harvey because he's a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He comes here and take my boy and they go play basketball, you know. And you know Trice Harvey, supervisor. And then I lived in Taft where he went to school. He was quite a football player in college.
But other than that, you've been turned against Republican.
That is right. And I didn't know he was a Republican when I voted for him. He probably wouldn't have got my vote.
Oh, yes.
And he's a good friend of mine. I like him well.
Well, how about before 1928, before Hoover, did you have any political views?
Oh, no, I was only 13 years old.
Young.
I was only 13 years old. But I know I heard my folks talk about him, you know, Hoover. Chicken in every pot, they say, and a car in every garage and all that stuff. He had the chicken, we had the pot. That was just the size of it.
Mm-hmm. And so when Roosevelt came into power, you supported him then?
Oh.
You were pro?
Oh, definitely. And I thought Roosevelt was one of the greatest things that ever was. And I still do. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when we started getting, you know, moving on our feet and getting out a little bit. But before that, man, I tell you, it was one of those things.
Yeah. How about when the drought came right about the same time. Do you remember much about how the drought affected your father's farm?
You mean the drought?
Uh-huh.
You telling me. A lot of years we didn't make a dime. Plant cotton out there and it'd get up maybe that high, go there and boll weevils would eat it up. You didn't have the chemicals like you have now, the spray and the stuff. And you just are hoping that you'd make something. You planted, you didn't know if you was going to get it or not. It was just a, what I'd say, a 30% chance that you was going to get anything. Cotton a lot of times wasn't even worth going out there and picking.
Hmm.
No, and we raised stuff to sell and things like that, you know, to get, we got by. We had our meat, chickens, eggs, butters, and milk like that. But it was just one of those things.
Mm-hmm. But the drought especially affected...
All the crops. Maybe sometimes you wouldn't make nothing. And then you plant cotton, the boll weevils eat it up. Always some kind of a something to, you plant something, there's something there to get it.
How about the dust storms? I know you lived in eastern Oklahoma.
The dust storms is mostly in the west.
Much.
It was mostly in the western part. Uh-huh. That's where it mostly blew away. We'd go out there, we'd plant potatoes. We'd have to go out there and pick the potato bugs off them by hand. We'd take a jar. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
We'd take a fruit jar and put kerosene in it,
mm-hmm.
and go out there, go down the rows and pick them potato bugs off and put in there to kill them, keep them from eating the potatoes up. Things like that, you had to do everything by hand. Now you just spray and with a airplane or go on. But we had to go out there and pick them. Did you ever?
Yeah, we did.
Man, I'll never forget things like that. You just can't.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember whether people talked about the drought and attributed it to something? Did people think that this was just God's way of dealing with nature, or did people speculate as to why there was a drought?
Well, really, I wouldn't know about that. The drought... The Dust Bowl was in the western part where they raised wheat, and it was dry there. You know, we had a little rain where we was, and trees and things like that. But this was out in the western part of Oklahoma, in the plains. That's where your big dust. We had a lot of dust, but it dried there where we was, and we didn't make nothing. But they had it worse out there.
Mm-hmm. Some people have said that part of the problem with the farms in Oklahoma in the 30s was that farming methods were not very sophisticated and people really didn't use their land very well. For instance, not very many farmers practiced crop rotation. cotton in that field years.
They wasn't scientific.
Nobody knew.
Wise enough then. You didn't have your, like your agricultural commissioner, you know, to tell you to or talk to or tell you how to do things like you do here. But like you say, you plant cotton here, that's where you plant cotton. You plant potatoes over here, you plant them over there, maybe year after year. And that's just the way. We had a watermelon patch, that's where the watermelons were. But why they didn't know enough to rotate and change?
And that depleted the...
I don't know, but those people, you know, they just wasn't educated to that. They're just old, hard-working people is all it was.
So your family did plant year after year, as everyone else.
Oh, definitely.
How about the way they planted? I've heard that when they plant in straight rows, that's not as good for the land as when you plant sort of in curves.
No, we plant in straight rows. In fact, like this was a row here, we'd set a stake in the middle, and one here, and one on each end, and then you'd head your team right down them stakes, and then you'd mark over here 10 more feet, put this one over, and line them up, and that's what you, where you made your rows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've got markers on the tractors that marks it when they go. Mm-hmm. We set a stake, and you had that team, you head right toward that stake, and then when you got to the end, it'd be a couple of us kids would move each stake over so much, and that's why you made your straight rows.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of them wasn't straight. Some old mules would wander a little bit, you know, but you tried to keep it straight, and that's the way you made your rows here. Which maybe the stake would be 10 foot high, and then you'd line them up and head right straight to them. And then you'd take it, lay it down 10 feet, set it up again. And that's the way they made rows.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's possible that the way people use their land, the way they planted it, might have had something to do with why the land wasn't as productive?
Oh, I know it did. It just wore the land out for that one crop. And then that one crop had to have certain vitamins or nutrients or out of the soil. Well, it just kept getting the same thing out every year. Well, if they would have rotated it, put alfalfa or a different crop in there, it would have kept the soil built up. But that's exactly what happened. They just did not know. They was not that smart. But it's come a long way since the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see that. As old as I'm, 67 myself. And I can see how it's things have progressed.
Mm-hmm. And when you first left Oklahoma, the first time that was in 1932?
32. We come on a freight train out here. A friend got killed over in Estes Fork, Arizona under the wheels. Me and my brother, and we met another guy on the railroad. And I was the fastest. And my brother, I'd let him catch it first before it get going too fast. And then we met a buddy. And my brother, Estes Fork, Arizona, my brother, I said, well, now you get it before it gets, he'd catch it. And then this other guy caught it. And then, no, I caught it next. And I looked back, and this other guy tried to catch it, and he went under the wheels. Chopped him all to pieces. I could just see his bones and legs bouncing under there. And the train went on a ways. They'd keep you off. It was rough. They'd keep you off till it would get going fast. They didn't want you on it. They'd throw coal at you. They had bulls that ride the train and knock you off till it'd get going real fast, see?
Were you ever thrown off?
Oh, a lot of times. We got thrown off over here in Barstow, and they shot at us. We run up. Walked 7 miles out of Barstow to catch it up at grade. They kept us off, and they had bulls. And then at last, when it really got rough, they didn't much care. But at first, it was rough. They didn't want you on them train. This guy trained.
Were you ever hurt when you were strong?
Oh, no. I could catch them. I could catch them fast as anybody that ever run. They'd throw you off, and maybe you'd have to wait 2 or 3 days. And then we'd go and bum, and it was rough bumming. We bummed our meals. We did. Maybe we'd leave Oklahoma with a dollar. And we would bum on the way. And the way we'd bum, we'd always get out in a part of town where if you bum along the railroads, that's all bummed out. Everybody's done got all in. People give out, so we'd go around over town. In fact, in Amarillo, One time we got so hungry there that we'd go around and follow the milkman. He'd set a carton of milk on the house. Well, we'd go get it. And for daylight, you know, to drink, we had to.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we stayed in jail there in Amarillo one time. We asked to stay in there. That we was hungry and cold and starving to death. And they fed us jackrabbit soup. That's what we eat there in the jail.
So you viewed the jail as a place to...
It was a jail.
...sleep in, get a meal, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely. Why, I'd go to these missions. They had soup lines. Why, I've made a lot of those.
Uh-huh.
That far, any town we'd go to, we'd ask. And we was hungry. It's, a lot of times you couldn't bum nothing to eat. In fact, I even bombed here at Arvin when they come out in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that old Mexican run that bakery down there. He was good to us. He'd give us... That's the first time I ever eat a... What is them things of making a bakery that I like?
Maple sticks.
That first time I ever eat maple sticks, he made them.
Mm-hmm.
We'd pull weeds in his garden.
That time in Amarillo, was that the only time that... You went to a jail for food and shelter?
Oh, that's one time I stayed in jail, just that one day. But we asked to stay.
Missions and places like that?
Oh, missions, yeah. We stayed in those. But in jail, they let us stay. It was cold. We was freezing to death. And they searched. We didn't search us. We had to leave all our things at the desk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we slept on the floor, right there on the floor. There were probably 50, 60 men in there. And the next morning,
well,
we got up.
This is a quite common thing. There were many other people who were bumming around.
Trains was loaded. The people had started moving. They just had to get out. The trains was loaded. I've helped whole families on them. You know, sometimes whenever the train is stopped, you can get in a boxcar and shut the door, and they can't get to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we slept down in the reefers where they put ice in. We got in there when we couldn't find no other place, right on top of them. And they had water stations across the desert when they had steam, you know, and coal. They had to stop and get water. Well, we'd get off and stretch our legs, run out on the desert over desert and stretch our legs and get a little exercise. And they'd give that highball. We always know the signals when it's going to move. We'd run and grab it, and here we go. I've rode the train. In fact, I've come to Bakersfield two or three times on a freight train from back there.
Mm-hmm. Where did you sleep? Just anywhere you could find?
We slept
if
in.
If you weren't on the train, like if you were trying to...
We'd sleep on the, get off the side, the rails, or the roundhouse, go out away and sleep. In fact, we were sleeping in Amarillo one time. Some other bum stole all my brother's clothes. We always take a sack of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a razor or two or three old clothes. And he was sleeping there one time. Somebody stole all his clothes, didn't have nothing but what he had on.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to make an analogy there. You said you would go on the trains, which was against the rules because the trains wanted to make some money and they would prefer that you buy a passenger ticket and, you know, ride the...
Yeah, but this is freight trains I'm talking about.
What I mean is... the reason that they wouldn't want you on the train is that they're in a business and getting a free ride in, and they would prefer that you pay your way some money.
I imagine that was it,
Or when, like you described, when the milkman came and went and took the milk. Now, you did this because
We didn't figure we were stealing. We was.
You didn't think of it that way.
No, but maybe he'd have three or four there. We wouldn't get them all. Maybe three or four quarts he'd leave at the house. Well, we just get one. We wouldn't raid them.
Mm-hmm.
But when they woke up, they had it, but there was one short.
Uh-huh. But you just felt that you were in such dire circumstances.
Well, we could have got thrown in jail if we'd have got caught. Yeah, it wasn't right. We knew that, but anyway.
So how did you feel when your brother's clothes were stolen? Did you?
Well, he had what he was on, and that was it. But he woke up. In fact, we'd sleep. And would put them under her head for a pillow. Sleep off side somewhere, under the bushes or under railroad trestles, anywhere like that. Maybe they had hobo camps, you know, where they make soup. We was young, and most of them old hobos was older. We were just young kids, but by golly, we was up enough that we got around.
Mm-hmm. Were you and your brother upset when his clothes were stolen, or did you tell you and perhaps someone else needed them more?
Well, I just figured somebody didn't have any.
So it wasn't a terribly...
Oh, no, it wasn't that big a deal. No, it really wasn't, but I'll never forget it. Right there in Amarillo.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we landed over in Barstow one time, they shot at us, the bulls did. All the trains had bulls, tried to keep you off. Well, we was running, and these bulls were shooting at us. We was going up a hill.
Yeah.
Right over here in Barstow, when we was coming, one time we was coming out here, boy. And then they kept us off over there so long that we walked 7 miles out of town to catch it, to get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
It was up a grade where it wouldn't be going fast, you know.
Well, did that scare you?
Well, sure.
Enough to prevent you from doing that again?
Well, if my kids would do that, I'd have a heart attack. It would scare. They don't even know what we went through. And if I just even seen one of mine doing it, it would scare me to death. To know that they did it. I guess my mother worried too.
But you were young and, as you say, very healthy and strong.
Oh, yeah. I was,
perhaps a little fearless.
I was just out of high school the first time in 32, see. I was a football star and basketball and baseball and all this and that, and I was quite an athlete. In fact, you can see I was on the first team they had there in Lamont.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how long it took you riding these trains to get from Oklahoma to California?
It'd take, depends on if you could catch the next train. A lot of times you didn't
remember the first time in 32, about how long?
It'd take us about a week. Took just about a week.
Do you remember if during that time, the first time in 32, whether you considered this sort of an adventure?
I did.
Or whether
I did.
Upset by
it? No, I figured it was something to do. Maybe, we probably had a dollar a piece when we got on it. We figured on bumming, mooching our meals, and which we did. And then we knew they had soup lines. We'd make all those. And in fact, we bombed around. In fact, we went to Denver one time, up Lakeside there, put us in a big motel up there. And then they stayed there for a while, and they shipped us on up to another place. And they gave us a whole set of winter clothes, this place did. Man, we got them clothes. We caught that next truck to town and left. My brother taught school up there. They found out he was a school teacher in this transit camp. And we made a lot of transit camps, and then he got a job teaching school up there for a while.
Oh, this was sort of like a government camp?
Yeah, the government, yeah.
Well, honey, you got teachers.
Yeah, but I never did teach, so I couldn't get a job after I got out of school, though. That's what started things. It was rough. In fact, to get a job back there, I'll just tell you, you had to pay the school board.
Did you know people who actually did that?
I know people that actually did that. I certainly do. I could name, but I wouldn't do it.
Did you ever wonder if they needed a job where they got the money to pay the school board?
You give them $100, and you had you a job at teaching school. That's just how rough it was. Yeah, I
had. Don't. Bribery like that was common in other areas too.
It was common in all of the areas back in there. To teach school, you'd bribe the. Now, the other, there were three members on the school board, but you only gave it to one probably because you didn't. The others didn't know he was getting it. In fact, my dad was on the school board. That's why I know all this.
How about other areas of government, do you think?
Well, now, I wouldn't know about other areas. I only know in the county where I was.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my cousin was sheriff, Pittsburgh County. That's where the pen is, McAllister. And then my uncle was a district judge, and my other cousin was county superintendent. They all, was up in there a little bit for a while. So everything just fell apart.
Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier about when you came out first time in 32. Now, when you came out here, you couldn't find any work. Is that right?
That's right. Went out there at Arvin and bummed around, and the guys in the bunkhouse, they had a couple of friends there from back in Oklahoma. That's how I come out. They said, oh, you may get a job out here. So they were sleeping, standing in the Georgia bunkhouse. I think it was, I don't know what it cost, 50 cents a day, board, room, and meals or something like that. And they would slip us food out. They'd eat and then wrap up sandwiches and they'd bring it to us under the trees while we're sleeping at night. And we stayed around out of Oregon, bummed. Never did get a job in 32, so we went back home, stayed a while, and nothing else. And then finally we got this scholarship to college, and me and my brother went on to college there for a couple of years. And I got my ligaments tore loose in my knee where I couldn't play anymore. And, of course, now they operate and there's nothing to it. Hell, I didn't have no money to pay for a doctor or nothing, no insurance. It ain't like it is now. Mm-hmm. Kids are, I had my, one of my boys was quarterback for the Bixfield Drillers. And he was pitched on a Bixfield baseball team, won the Valley Championship. He's a good athlete. Well, he's one that went to Cal State. He graduated over there. Second year it was there, I think. He went to Fresno University, got a scholarship. But anyway, he liked a few credits, but he finished up there. He's one that owns a Thieves Toy General in Oradell. Mm-hmm. I was probably telling you about it. And
so
it was rough.
So after you got out of college then, did you look for employment in Oklahoma?
After I got out of college, I was 34, started roaming again.
Mm-hmm.
We started, and then in nothing doing. In fact, dollar here and a dollar there, round in there. And then finally when Roosevelt, I had a heck of a time getting into CC camps. I finally got into that, $5 a month and 25 home. That's the way it was.
Where did they send you?
Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I stayed up there and the winter hit. Got cold. We was working up there in a camp, Cheyenne. That's where the big, let's see, Fort Prentiss E. Warren. That's where the big army base is. And we was working out there on parks, and it snowed and got about 2 foot deep of snow, and then they shipped us in the bottom of Grand Canyon. We built trails down in there. That was in 35.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so you worked most of the time in CCC in the Grand Canyon?
In Grand Canyon, building trails. We walked down in there. And I've always said, they got a big dude ranch in there. You go down the Kaibab Trail, that's the name of it. It's 7 miles you walk. Man, and it is rough. And they got a big dude ranch in there. And I used to see these big dudes from Chicago and New York ride these mules down in there. It's quite a walk. It is. You could go down in there and stay all night for $5. Now I think it's $100. And I've always said I'm going back someday and ride a mule down.
Was that difficult work building the trails?
Oh, no. Build trails for sightseeing. No, it was. You didn't work hard. You had tents down there. They had tents we stayed in, mess hall, and recreation. In fact, we walked up one time and carried a pool table down. They tore the pool table all pieces. Now, I forget how many of us went up to the top of the rim, and we carried a pool table down to have just recreation like that. Most of the kids was in there was from my hometown. They just signed up there and put us all on a passenger train, that first passenger train I ever rode. And they sent us to Cheyenne, and then we knew everybody. Everybody was from right there, probably 200 of us. Got on his train and left Oklahoma at one time. When in fact, we knew all.
You have the picture of that old picture?
Yeah, I've got the picture of that was taken in Cheyenne. Got my picture. Go get that. Maybe. Well, I don't know if you'd want to see it or not. But.
You said it was snowing in Cheyenne, but did you do any work up there?
No, that's when they shipped us out.
So
when the weather got bad in the winter, we couldn't do anything. So they shipped us down to Grand Canyon where it's warm all the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy working down in the Grand Canyon?
Oh, no. It was, I was the type that had to have activity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know I was what you'd call it, but it was kind of.
Keep busy now. Your activity now.
It was kind of like, let me show you. This is one.
You were saying that all the fellows in the
was from the impoverished homes, you know, people that was hard up. That's why they got the only way you could get in a CC camp. And all those kids, I think it was probably 200 of them, loaded us all on a passenger train. That was my first, well, gosh, I was 35. I was 22 years old then, I guess. So something like that, and still nothing to do. 21 or 2, something in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And, well, all those guys was up like that. And I got to be assistant leader in there. That paid $5 more. Mm-hmm. So I got $10, where the rest of them was getting $5. Well, they had, oh, you'd have a work crew, you know, you'd be the kind of the boss of them. Well, most of them were just in there. We done a lot of work. We worked and everything. We had recreation ball teams. In fact, I was on a ball team up in there. We'd go around and play different CC camps. And that's was our recreation. They had pool tables and big rec hall. And it was a lot of fun. We had boxing matches. And in fact, I got a picture here of me boxing up there with a champion of the camp, haven't I, Louise? Somewhere, me and Butch Concert. In fact, I was going to see him when I went back to Okie last time, but I didn't. Most of these guys have left there, you know, and then when the high school reunion, man, here they flock back.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you got $5 a month and they sent home $25 to your family.
Uh-huh.
Could you tell me a little bit about how your family was doing at that time?
Well, that's what they lived on.
That helped
them a lot. That was why they had that. But $25 was a lot of money then.
Mm-hmm. A dime was a dime.
A dime was a dime. In fact, they used to advertise for the show there in our field, had a big billboard, and they'd give us a ticket. And I didn't like shows, and I'd sell mine for a dime to get the dime. To sell it, you know, they'd give us 2 tickets to advertise every week on this billboard had in our field. And somebody wanted a ticket, I'd go uptown, I'd sell it for a dime, so I'd get the money.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like much, but by golly, it was pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I went with her when she was in high school, and she still got a Valentine I gave her in 1932. And there she was married all that many years and kept my picture and everything. You'll never see a Valentine like that. And there she was married to another man, and here I got married out here in Oregon. Well, I was working in a packet house, and my first wife said, that's the guy I'm going to marry right there. And sure enough, I never seen him before in my life. But she told a woman that, and sure enough, we got married.
Mm-hmm. When you were in the CCC, some people have said that because it was a government program and because it was funded by the government, that was kind of like a form of aid, and some people didn't think that should be. Do you remember having any feelings about that, whether you thought you were getting help from the government, or did you regard it as a job and you were being paid to do that?
I figured that I was helping the environment and the government. I was, you know, I'd been to school, and I could see that we were doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think that it was relief or anything like that. I figured that I had a job, and I worked just as hard as I did when I was out for $5 a month or 10. Well, I eventually got 10 because I was assistant leader. Mm-hmm. I think a leader got, I think he got 15 to keep. You got the $5, and that was your money for that month, $5. A lot of guys would gamble, you know, and they'd borrow ahead of time and never good payback. Well, that caused a little friction. But I think you'll notice in that picture, I don't think there was a colored guy in it, was he? I don't think. Well, that was for all this integration, you know. In the 35, yeah. Of course, where I live, blacks had their own school. We never went to school with a colored guy in our life. In fact, my kids never went to school till I moved to Bakersfield. I lived in Taft for 20 years. None was there, you know. And when I moved here, I was scared to death for my boys to go to Bakersfield High. And they fit in beautifully.
They loved it.
In fact, my boy, Steve.
Okay, we were just talking about the CCC, and you said you did think that the work you did there was valuable. It wasn't just busy work or something like that.
What was that?
The work you did at the CCC in the Grand Canyon.
Oh, we built trails.
Mm-hmm. But you said that was valuable work.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Busy work.
Oh, yeah.
It helped
build trails, you know, for sightseeing and things like that. It was something to get the guys off of the street. There was nothing else for them to do. It was to get them away and to help us and then our families. That was
and
the,
beneficial to
that was a Civilian Conservation Corps. That was the name of it, and it was to, it helped the country and the people too.
You said your father got involved with the WPA. Do you remember much about that?
Oh yeah, they used to build sidewalks in parks there, and they worked on the road. Any kind of thing that you know, they did like that. A lot of people back there got on WP. It was a government project.
Mm-hmm.
But
they built bridges,
honey. Nothing else to do. Yeah, he built a lot of bridges. They'd build bridges and work on the roads and highways. That was WPA for you.
Mm-hmm. Did he still have his farm at that time, or had he?
Oh, he had his farm, yeah, but couldn't make nothing on it. Couldn't make nothing on it. Just couldn't get by. Oh, yeah. He had his farm then. He didn't sell it till 38 when he come to Lamont. He come out there and had, I'll never forget it, he pulled up with that old truck and the old tarp on it. Looked like about Beverly Hillbillies. That's exactly what you would think. I think he had seven of the kids in there, and he had a one-legged guy driving it. He was a mechanic. And he had a one-legged guy driving it. And otherwise, Papa wasn't that good a mechanic. If it broke down, he could have fixed it, see?
Mm-hmm.
Papa and Mama and seven kids and Joe Miller.
Mm-hmm.
I come out there and there, I had a little old two-room house. They all shacked up with me there for a while until they could get them, I could get them a job out to Georgia around the packing house.
Now, you, after you graduated from college, you said you looked around, but you couldn't find any work.
That is.
When did you decide to come out to California again? Was that in 36?
36. I had, when I couldn't find work out of college, that's when I went to CC camps. And after 34, 35, see. And then I got out of CC camp, still nothing. So we caught a freight train, come out here, got off there in East Bakersfield, and then we caught that old spur line out to Arvin out there. We were starved to death. Clifton got off there and eat them Thompson grapes. He vomited, got sick. He just must eat a gallon. And man, I tell you, that's the best things I've ever eaten in my life. And then we hung around there. That's when we slept under the trees. Couldn't get on at first. And went to bumming. Guys bringing stuff. It was all in that same area. And finally, we got on there to Georgia. And then we got a place to stay. We stayed in the bunkhouse.
To Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Stayed right there in the bunkhouse. We was picking grapes, and then they found out we was a little smarter than some of the Hokies, and that's when we went in the packing house and started tallying.
First in 32 and then again in 36 when you made your trips to California. Did you ever consider going someplace else, or was it always California?
It's always never went east. I don't know. Everything was west.
You just always thought that California would be the place.
Yeah, we never did go east. I don't know why, but the freight trains run this way.
Uh-huh. Did people in Oklahoma talk about California?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Oh, yeah, somebody'd come out here and make a dollar or two, and they'd go back, and they'd tell them, you know, just like we did. We'd go back and get a little slack in the grape for two or three weeks. Man, we'd head back to Hokie and bring somebody else back. That'd pay our expenses, and then we could go back and brag what we done, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the sorts of rumors there were about California? What sort of a place California was?
Well, I didn't like it at first. Oh, I come
what
out here.
What kind of rumors were there when people come back?
Oh, they would tell you, you know, you could get a job. That was the main thing, was job. There was no job back there. Main thing, you could get a job out here. In fact, I worked around Shafter and picked up potatoes over there for Mettler. You've heard of Mettler's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, T.H. Mettler.
So when you came out here, you expected you to be able to find a job?
Oh,
with you?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, we didn't for a while, but finally when the crops got going good, you know, nearly everybody could get a job, and then they had the government camp there at Weed Patch where most of the transit your people
were
would
live. Were you disappointed when you got here?
When I got out here, I was homesick. I wanted to make a little money to get enough to go back, you know. And then I don't know how many trips I made till I decided I liked it. You just too much Okie in me, you know. You just, back there was close-knit and everything, and out here, I don't know, people didn't seem to worry about anybody else. Back here, they did. Everybody knew what everybody did, and if you got sick, everybody helped you. Mm-hmm. But out here, it was just, didn't know your next-door neighbor, I'll say.
Nobody seemed to care.
Yeah, that's right, the way it was at first. But I had no trouble blending in. I mean, I could talk and have a conversation, get around with most anybody.
Mm-hmm. California kind of had a reputation of being the land of plenty when you were back in Oklahoma. And people would talk about it. Everything's in California. You yeah. have a job there. And when you came out here, you found out that that wasn't the case.
Oh,
at all.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, we settled, when we come out here, mostly around our people, it was from there. You know, that's mostly the people we mingled with, because they was out on the farms. We wasn't in town like in Bakersfield. Of course, that's for your merchants, I guess, and people that's lived here for years. But where we come out here, your own people, like from Okie and Texas and Arkansas, where you spoke their language, and, you know, we got along real good. We didn't, we never had any trouble.
So once you did find a job, you were satisfied?
Oh, when we found a job, we was on Fifth Avenue in New York City. Yeah, we got moved into that bunkhouse. We could get a shower, had our own room, and things like that, a little radio, you know. And then after I got married, they had houses on the ranch here. $3 a month is what it cost me.
Do you remember if very many people were disappointed enough with California that they went back to Oklahoma?
Oh, definitely, yeah. A lot of them never could adjust. A lot of families I know went right straight back, stay a little while, get enough money, and that was it. No, they just couldn't adjust to what it was. It was different back in Oakland than what it is here.
Mm-hmm.
It was just different climate. In fact, you had your tornadoes and all that lightning and stuff like that. People get scared of the earthquakes here. They'd hear that, oh, man, you had a little earthquake, 52, they just loaded up and went back. Yeah, that scared them to death. Well, that don't bother me, but that lightning and thunder. Now, we was back here year before last there in Shawnee where her boy lived. We had 22 of us and went in the cellar. Big tornado coming through and a siren was blowing. Man, I was scared to death. Here, nothing like that bothers me. Lightning a strike and you could just see it hitting everywhere. Here we're running to that cellar. God, that was... I don't know why I want to go back. Now, when we went back high school reunion 2 years ago, we got eat up with them chiggers. They got on Louise, all up here in her clothes, and she scratched till she was bleeding. We got to California. Them chiggers, you know, do you know what a chigger is?
Mm-hmm.
You can't see them. They make little red bumps on you. We bought everything in that drugstore to try. We'd forgot about chiggers. They don't have them here. But they're little red things, and they get on your legs. You walk out in the grass, you've got them. You can't get out and sit on the lawn like you can here. But we'd forgot about it. We parked our trailer there and got out and was having a good time. Boy, that next day, blood was running off of her where she scratched, and it was all up in their underwear all over her body. She went to the drugstore, and we took baths and everything,
mm-hmm.
tried to get rid
so
of it.
So when you first came out to California, you were very impressed with the climate and the
that's what
of it.
I was telling
much
about
better than Oklahoma.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Here it was hot, but the heat don't bother me.
Mm-hmm. How about the way the land looked? This is a very flat valley. It seems to be endless. Did the difference in landscape bother you?
Oh, yeah. This here, back there you'd see trees and hills and lakes and streams. Here, nothing but an old dry desert, and that got me. I just couldn't go for that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you could just see for miles, you know, before all the smog come in. Well, you used to come off a grapevine up there and off these hills, you just see this whole valley before the smog come in.
Do you remember the first time you came on the train through the Tehachapis and saw the valley? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, I knew I was getting close to where I was going, and I was happy. We got off right there at East Bakersfield, went in a filling station there and cleaned up. and asked around the railroad yard, I said, when's this little spur line going out to Arvin? And they told us for that afternoon, so we waited around. They showed us where to go. We got on that spur line, rode that freight train right out to Arvin. We couldn't have got out there. I couldn't. I never was no good highway in it.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Well, how about when you first came out of the mountains and you saw this huge valley? Do you remember?
Oh, I remember exactly.
Was it very awesome?
No,
beautiful?
I kind of remembered what to look for from the guys coming back and telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how.
Oh, was it pretty, honey?
Oh, beautiful. Oh, you'd. We come out one year in the wildflowers. That whole thing. See, none of that. Wheeler Ridge was in farming at all.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go there and them wildflowers. We used to go out and picnic in them after we moved out. It was beautiful.
And it looked big.
Oh,
everything
was big to what we just used to, a little old community back there, you know, close knit and everybody. And out here, spread out, man, this is the biggest world I ever seen. That's just the way it seemed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to get adjusted, even after I got here. I'd want to run back, every chance I get.
Yeah, that's the main thing, I think.
And then finally, I wouldn't live nowhere else.
Mm-hmm. Your first job then was at DiGiorgio, and you lived there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me about that job? You said they put you in the packing shed.
No, they put us out in the field first.
No, I mean, but then later they...
Later they put us in the packing house.
How long were you in the fields then?
Oh, not very long until they found out we had a little sense.
Uh-huh.
And well, we was out there maybe 2 or 3 weeks, me and my brother. And that was... Now, I didn't like that. That was picking them grapes on them vines and packing them there. You'd pack them right there, or you'd pick some and they'd send them into the packing house. And so we got talking to foremen, you know. They needed some tally. Guys could tally, you know, add and figure out what was going in the car. So they found out, me and my brother, and they moved us in the packing house. And there we stayed. And then finally...
So that was... Much easier work.
Oh, just stand around and with a tally sheet in your hand, here come these grapes on conveyors. And they had guys in there loading them. And you just check the tiers, what kind they were.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, it was good. And it was refrigerated cars. It was, you know how hot it gets out there, 110. Well, we was in there where it was cool. Man, I was in seventh heaven. I think we got a nickel an hour more. I think we got 30 cents for that. And then finally...
How long did you work there?
Oh, I worked 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. I left there when the war started.
Okay, so you worked at DiGiorgio that whole time in the late 30s.
Oh, yeah, all the time. I was at DiGiorgio. That was my only job, man. I loved it out there. I was on a baseball team, and we got to know people, and I got married there, and my wife's folks lived on the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And war started. I figured, well, I got to do something constructive or something. I went to the shipyards in Long Beach,
mm-hmm.
and was a certified pipe welder.
When you were at DiGiorgio, could you tell me a little bit about your employers and the ranchers there? Did you feel that they treated you well?
Oh, good.
Very good.
Oh, I was right in with them. Oh, definitely. In fact, Hartford Allen, when it done the hiring, he was basically on our baseball team. Elick Germanetti lives, he's a big softball pitcher. Yeah, he lives over in Kern City now. I think he's still living. And little Joe DiGiorgio, in fact, I seen him the other day. My cousin died, one of my cousins right here since the picnic. He died 2 weeks ago. Right there, Joe Pretty. And little Joe DiGiorgio went to his funeral. Now, that's how much he thought of him. He was my first cousin. Joe was a watchman at the packing house. And I was surprised to see little Joe DiGiorgio at the funeral. You know, a guy like that, a millionaire, you wouldn't expect him to go to a guy's funeral like that, but by golly, he was there. I didn't get to talk to him. I just seen him as he was leaving. I was going to talk to him because I know him real well.
So you felt that you were close to him?
Oh, definitely. All the bosses, we just got along good with them. In fact, they were just like us. They was that common people.
Did you feel that the pay you received was fair?
Oh, definitely. Anything they'd have paid me, I'd have been happy.
Uh-huh.
Hell, oh, well, now, I'll take that back. In 39, my other brother there, wanted a nickel an hour raise, and they wouldn't give it to him. So he quit. And then when he quit, they gave me the nickel, and I took his job. Now, isn't that something? And he went to work for Pacific Pipeline. He was an estimator and everything. Right here in Bakersfield, Roy Price, he's a millionaire. And then in 45, my brother started his own company, and I guess he got up to be a millionaire nearly. He had money. Well, I've seen him tip waitress $100. That's the way he threw his money away. He got in business. He was had this company in Taft for 20 years. I worked there. After the war, I moved from Long Beach straight to Taft.
When you were working for DiGiorgio, you said you were tallying for a while.
Yeah.
Now, did you do that?
No, I got wised up and started loading cars that paid 70 cents an hour. So that paid a lot more, and I got to be one of the fastest car loaders there was out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, when they come in on a conveyor, you put them in tiers and then nail them, you know. You got strippers there, you get a handful of nail men just like that. And I got real good at that. While I was tallying, and the car loader would be gone a little, the grapes would be coming in kind of slow, I'd learn to trade. I started loading. So I got where I was real good. And it was a contractor out of Arvin, Bill Yotes. He had the contract for loading the cars. We'd load 20, 30 cars of grapes a day. And I got doing that, and that paid 70 cents. So I was really, really in the chips, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Was that strenuous work?
Oh, the strenuous. God almighty, I can't hardly bend over now. That kill you. Hard. Well, I'd go home at night. I'd have to straighten the cars come in like that, and they weighed 32 pounds, but you handle thousands of them a day. Let's see. 1,032 went in a car. I'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard work.
All that hard work to get the extra.
Well, I was making just about twice what the ones in the packing house was, so you can just see. But it was hard. Mm-hmm. It was some of the hardest work that I ever done, was loading cars. But you had to be good, you had to be fast, because them guys out there running the lidding machine, they was working piecework. The more lids they put on, the more money they make. Well, that made it harder on you. You just had to, you had to work, boy. It was.
Because you were paid by the hour then.
You were paid by the hour. We didn't get paid by the car. The contractor got paid by the car. The harder we worked, the faster we worked, the more he made.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was the size of it.
Yeah. Did you ever do any other jobs at Georgia?
Yeah, I swamped on a truck, and then I irrigated, and then I worked out putting the trellises up on the grapes, you know, in the wintertime. Work was slow with nothing to do. So we'd work out on the wire gang. They'd put up the posts for the trellises to the grape vines to run on.
Mm-hmm.
In the wintertime, that was the way we'd do. We didn't have grapes all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. What other crops did you work in?
They had grapes, they had asparagus, and I cut asparagus out in the field, and then I was the inspector in there, in the shed, when asparagus, that was early spring, had asparagus, they had peaches, plums, pomegranates, and all different varieties of grapes, and then they had a cold storage area, and I was head of the cold storage area. They would, when the market would get glutted, you know, price drop, they'd stick them downstairs in this cold storage. In fact, I helped build a cold storage. And they'd store them there till the price went up. And here they'd go to market. Things just like that.
Did you have an off-season there? You said in the wintertime you put these trellises up, but was there a time when you were out of work?
Oh, yeah, that's when I'd head to Oakey.
A few weeks?
I'd run to Oakey and tell them to come out.
You went back on the train then?
No, finally in 37... After I got to work, I got my little old 26 Chrysler, and it would go back in it, but it didn't cost much, you know, for gas. I told you, $13.15 one way is what it cost me, and then I'd bring a couple of pastures back for 20 bucks. Well, hell, I had it made. We wouldn't stop on the road. We'd pack a lunch here in Oakey, and that was our eats till we got to California.
Mm-hmm. About how long would that take you to get to California?
30 hours. We had a
Did
time.
Did you take turns driving or something?
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
One person would sleep?
One drive a while, and then the other drive a while. Maybe I don't remember us ever. We never stayed in a hotel. No, never. We'd sleep maybe on the side of the road or pull off or maybe drive straight through. We done that a lot of times. Just drive straight through. Once we got us a car, we was doing pretty good. Or we thought we was. Boy, I tell you.
Do you remember about how many trips you made?
Oh, I've made at least a dozen.
In the 30s?
Oh, yeah, in the 30s. I made at least that many before I got adjusted. It just couldn't get that okey out of me, that's all.
Uh-huh. And part of the reason was to bring other people out here.
Well, that's the way I'd pay for my trip. I didn't make any money, but it would just pay your expenses, you know.
What people did you bring?
Just cousins. Some of them, a lot of them cousins right there rode with me, right there. Ruth rode out with me and all them in here. A lot of the Joe Pretty, he was one, little Joe DiGiorgio went to his funeral the other day. And Eunice come out with me, Eunice Sparks, she's up north. Thomas Lackey there. I'd just bring a lot of them under, tell them about it. They'd follow you, maybe. That's the way we got started out here.
Mm-hmm. And everyone wanted to come to California.
Oh, they wanted to. Wanted a job. They wanted to improve themselves.
They wanted to work, period.
They would have all worked if they'd had a job, but they just nothing there. I just think if my kids would have grown up there, what they would have been doing now. Nothing. There's no work there now, even. That old whiz back to that one town, and I'd say half of those stores in that town where I lived are boarded up.
Yeah.
Right today in that one town where I live. They got one factory there. It's
a government
deal, electronic. That's all it used to be, the coal mines. That's all that's keeping that town up is that electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And then people out on little farms grow what they got. But
when you would bring them out to California, would you introduce them so they could have jobs?
Oh, I'd get them jobs. Oh, yeah. I was kind of, you know, politician.
Settled, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got to where I knew all the bosses. I'd get them jobs or they'd find one. Some of them would move on. Now, one of my cousins come out with me. He didn't stay here long. He went up to Big Pine up by Bishop. And he's lived there ever since, 37. He won't get out of them hills. He's a prospector. He moved right on up there.
Do you remember having car trouble on all those trips back and forth?
Every time I'd go back, I'd get this Joe Miller, one that brought my dad out. I'd give him a pint of whiskey to work on my car. He'd like that whiskey. He'd work on that car if I had trouble. He'd get it tuned up for me before I'd come back. All I had to do is go get him a pint of whiskey. Bootleg whiskey, and that's all he wanted.
Did you ever break down alongside the road?
Not really. We've had a lot of flats, but not really, because I'd get him to work that, mm-hmm. check that over before I left.
Right. So no serious.
All he had wanted was a pint of whiskey.
And he was a good mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
A good mechanic, but he died out. Well, in fact, he died out here. He used to run a garage out here, but.
Have you ever seen other cars? A lot of people have a stereotype of the Okie coming out in a big jalopy with his mattress on.
That's the way my dad was, I was telling you. He had that big old tarp over. He bought him, sold that farm.
But he did have a tarp over here.
He had a tarp over it, and all them kids and cooking stove, and they'd stop side the road. After I've seen Beverly Hillbillies, that's my dad.
Mm-hmm.
All them kids.
Did you see a lot of cars like that?
Oh, a lot of people coming out like that. You'd say, well, a rich Okie's got two mattresses. You've heard that.
Oh, yeah.
And the poor ones that got one. Well,
right.
My dad had
all from Oklahoma. There's some for Texas and Arkansas.
Yeah, but most of the Okies was out here. It beat all I ever seen.
Well, did you feel that you were pretty fortunate then?
To get a job? Oh, definitely.
Because you had your job and you had a car.
And I had a house out there for $3. They had little cabins there on the ranch. It was $3 was house rent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, well, he wasn't making.
Since you made so many trips back and forth, you had to come across the border into California many times. Do you remember ever having any trouble coming across
the border? No, they'd check you. They'd check and go through your stuff, you know, and we'd go back, we'd take grapes, but we'd have to have a federal stamp on those grapes before you could take them across. Oh, they had border, but we didn't have any trouble. We'd have to unload everything out and pile it out there and go through it and see it. I didn't like that, but what the heck, that's the law, you have to abide by it.
Do you remember, were the officials there very polite, or?
Well, they never gave me any trouble. Of course, you can't argue with them. They're the boss, the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. If I'm working for a guy and he tells me to do something, if I don't do it, well, I'm going to quit. If he tells me something, I'm supposed to do it. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's the boss, and he's getting paid the boss. I'm not getting paid the boss, but they tell me to unload it. I unloaded everything. It'd go through your trunk. They'd even tear your suitcase and go through them and check everything out. I don't know what they're looking for. But anyway, that was the rules. They're not so strict now. Last time we come through there last year with the trailer house, he just looked in the icebox and seen if we had something.
Brought them from here.
Oh, we had apricots.
Yeah.
And he said, "Do you get these in Oklahoma?" I said, "No, I got them out at Lamont." He said, "What?" He said, "You're going to California." I said, "Yeah," but I said, "I had them all the way." But he didn't take them.
Mm-hmm.
One time we had to sit there and eat our apples. He wouldn't let us bring apples or something across. And I said, "Well, I'll just eat them right here." So we eat them right there.
Well, basically, you didn't have any unusual.
Oh, no unusual experience.
They didn't have anything to
do. They let us come right through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you were working at DeGiorgio, do you remember seeing women and children working in the fields there, or was it all male?
Mostly men. Women worked in the packing house. Mostly, I don't recall women. No, women worked in the packing house, and the men worked in the fields. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any women working. Well, they might have worked in other farms. I guess they did. But in Georgia, they had a big packing house. Used a lot of women. And they worked in the packing house, packing all the time. The men worked in the fields.
Mm-hmm. In your off-season, you spent most of your time going back and forth to Oklahoma. If there was no work.
Yeah.
In the off-season.
They'd lay you off for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Here, I'd head back.
Uh-huh. How about your other leisure time? If you had a few days here or there, or a weekend or something like that, do you remember what you did in your free time?
Oh, we'd, on the weekends, we'd go to Weed Patch, that government camp, and play cards. We'd play all night. We'd go there maybe Friday night or Saturday night, and we'd play clear over Sunday, play cards. They had dances there, had music. Everything was going on at that government camp. And then I play any kind of game there is. Dominoes, I'm one of the best in the world. Checkers, all that kind. In fact, we just come from Lake Success and I seen old men over playing checkers. He said, "You ought to play." I said, "I'm the best in California." And I started playing. He said, "I'll play you for $10 a game." I said, "Let's make it 20. He said, "Boy," said, "you didn't understand me." I said, "Yes, I did." He said, "I'll play you for 10. He didn't want to bet. He said, "If I play him, I got to give him $10. See the trick? He was 73 years old, and he said, "I'll play you for $10 a game." Well, if I play him, I got to give him $10, and I beat him 5 out of 7. He was surprised as everything because he'd been beating everybody.
So you play games and you went to the government camp. Were there the dances there?
Had dances every Saturday night, and then mm-hmm. we'd go up to people that lived in the camp there and play cards. We'd play for maybe a dime a game or something like that, what you could afford.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my brother was pretty good, and we'd always win a little. We had a little extra money there.
Did you go into town very much, into Bakersfield?
No, not to go to Arvin. It always come out of the bunkhouse there before I got married, and there always people, kids there didn't have cars working there, and you'd give everybody a ride. It ain't like now, you're scared to death. I'd love to give these kids a ride on freeway, but I'm scared. There, you pick up everybody. No problem at all with knocking you in the head then. In fact, we had our rooms there in the bunkhouse. You just leave your door wide open. Nobody would steal anything. Nobody had nothing to steal.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember seeing very many migrant workers, workers who had to travel from place to place looking for
food? Oh, yeah. When they shut there in the winter, they would head to other places down the Imperial Valley. But see, I got on there, and they liked me and my brother, and they give us permanent jobs. In mm-hmm. fact, we both married while we was there. He went back to Oklahoma and picked up his wife and brought her back out there. And they gave him a house to live in. And then I got married, and they gave me a little house.
But you remember many of the migrant workers, what their conditions were like? Because they did not have this permanent job.
Well, they just lived around wherever they could, in tents and under trees and everything. That's what I did at first. It wasn't all permanent. They had certain bunch there at work study, you know, they give you houses there. And I got on that way, and I worked pretty steady. Oh, no, seasonal work's like working out picking grapes. If I hadn't got on the packing house, I'd have just been another old peon out there, you know, picking grapes. But we got in with
Do you think that these people who were migrant workers and were not settled could have been taken advantage of? Do you think they were taken advantage of?
I don't think so. No, I didn't, not out there. I didn't see anybody taking it.
Georgia.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody. It was a nice place in the 30s to work. Friendly, the bosses were good. In fact, I talked to the old man DiGiorgio, the one that owned it, and Little Joe. He'd come in the cars where I'd load in cars, and I'd just sit there and talk to him. And he's just like a common people. You know, you get to know them. All the bosses were swell.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
they treated those Okies as they treated their permanent employees.
Oh, yeah. There was no abuse that I could see.
Mm-hmm.
And I could, you know, I got around a lot then. I didn't just stand still, and I could see what was going on, and I thought it was pretty fair. Only thing my brother left, because he wouldn't give him a nickel hour raise. What is that, 40 cents a day? Now, isn't that something? And they wouldn't,
that was a lot of money then.
And he left in 39, and then he got to be where he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in dozers and tractors and all that kind of stuff, just over a nickel. Now, that changed his life right there.
Do you remember if people ever came around trying to organize unions in the 30s?
That happened after I left. They did. They had a big strike out there, and that happened. I left then. That was after I left. There was no problem.
But when you were there, you didn't hear
anything. No, didn't know nothing about it. Didn't know nothing about a union or nothing.
Mm-hmm. How about strikes? Did you ever hear about people striking?
Not when I was there. I was there 35 years I was there. And nothing like that. Everybody seemed to be happy because you couldn't go nowhere else and work. They just blended in right there, and that was it.
Lucky to have a job.
Why, yeah, nobody. You strike, you'll have to be starving to death.
Yeah. That year.
That was, I think it was in 39. Work gets slack out there in the winter, you know. We'd drive over to Camp Roberts, and we stayed over there in a tent, and we helped build that big army base there. And that's where my dad and one of my brothers got in a carpenter's union.
Mm-hmm.
There, and my dad retired out of the carpenter's union, and so did my brother. And we worked on that, and I worked over in one winter. Man, it was, I thought that, I forget what we made there now. That was in 39, so we made a lot more than we did it to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was government construction, you know. And then just in the spare time when they didn't really have a job for you, in wintertime things got slow out there. They got everything caught up. And then they had to, Jap camp there, and a Filipino camp, a Mexican camp, and I forget how many different kind of nationalities. And then when the war broke out in 41, they put me a guard down there over the Japs, Camp 8.
Where was that camp?
De Georgia. Oh, they had a big Jap camp there, and they didn't know what them Japs was going to do when the Japs attacked.
You went to the shipyards, wasn't it?
After that.
Oh, okay.
After the war started, I went to the shipyard. Yeah, but this was when the war started in December the 7th and 41. Well, that's I didn't leave there till after the war started. See, I figured, well, I better get into some construction or something here. And they put me a guard down there over them Japs at Camp 8 there in Georgia. You know, they didn't know what they was going to do. And finally, I think they moved them all out and put them in concentration. Them Japs there, they had a big bathhouse where men and women go around there and take a bath together, you know. Didn't matter if it was your wife or whose wife it was. That's the way Japs were then. They even done that here. Out there, I'd be guard there, and I'd see all of them come out of the towel, wrapped around, they all go in there and take a shower together. It didn't mean nothing to them. And everywhere you seen a Jap, then they had a camera. I don't know why, but they always was taking pictures. And after that, in 41, that was December, 42 is when I left, went to Long Beach. So that's where I went to work in a shipyard, and I got to be a high-pressure pipe welder. That paid a little more than, paid 2 bits an hour more than a regular pipe welder. So I was always trying to get a little more money, you know. So that was the way things was working. I was just like my brother when he left. They wouldn't give him a nickel raise out of the Georgia. And just over 40 cents a day he left.
This is the second interview with James Lackey on Thursday, April 2nd, 1981 at 11 a.m.
Last time we were talking about when you worked on the DiGiorgio Ranch, and you said you lived there on the ranch in a home there.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that home? Describe it to me, how long
well,
it was?
Well, they had a little cabin here that about, there was 2 rooms. And they had them there for the workers, ones that they wanted to keep year-round, you know. Of course, we didn't work year-round because a lot of slack period. But we lived there. It cost us $3 a month, like I told you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got water and electricity, and we had butane for heat. So it really wasn't that expensive. So,
mm-hmm.
Of course, we wasn't making much, and that's why they had us cheap rent. But if you rented, lived off the ranch, it cost you quite a bit more. This way we could just walk right across to work. Didn't even have to buy gas or anything for the car, and everything was real, real simple.
And did you live with your brother there?
My brother had his own house.
You each had your own
house? Oh yeah, we got married. We lived in a bunkhouse at first. I forget, bunkhouse, boarding room, I don't know, $1 a day or something like that. And when we first went there, we wasn't married. So we lived in the bunkhouse, and after we got married, well, they decided they'd like for a stay, so they give us a house. That's where we got married when we was working there.
What was the bunkhouse like?
Oh, it's a big, big, long bunkhouse, and had different rooms in it. You didn't lock your door, nobody'd steal anything or anything like that. And a whole bunch of guys lived in there in the bunkhouse, and then they had a mess hall where they had cooks. I think they had Japanese cooks or Chinaman cooks, and you would eat there at the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would eat together and go bring you in at noon on a truck, go there and eat, and then take you back out to work.
Mm-hmm. Was it fairly clean and pleasant?
Oh, definitely. Oh, it was nice. I think, well, it was nice to me from what I was used to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was real nice there. I liked to work there. You didn't make much, but didn't cost you much to live either.
Mm-hmm. Now, other people who worked on the ranch but weren't permanent hands had to find someplace else to live.
Oh, yeah, they would live at Weed Patch at the government camp. See, that was cheap there. Had this Weed Patch government camp. Most of the transit and people would live there, and it didn't cost them any more than it did me. Then some people at Lamont and places like that. Your whole family worked if they could, but they was big enough. Yeah, you'd see your whole families would work because more kids they had and everything like that. More money they got. And that Weed Patch government camp there, well, whole families go out in the field, you know, some of them work, take the whole children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had been to that camp, say, at night for dances and cards and things like that.
Yeah.
You remember much about the camp?
Not too much. Just we'd go there every weekend, you know, Saturday night and Friday night. Well, we'd play cards and they'd have dances, and that's about all there was around there.
Mm-hmm. Did you remember ever visiting anyone there? Did to see what it was like when they met?
In their home? Oh, yeah. We'd go into homes and play cards with different people that lived there. They work on the ranch, you know. And they'd invite you over, and we'd go out to their homes.
What was their home like, honey?
Well, it's just regular old...
Room,
yeah, just like it was anywhere else where we lived. Their homes no different from ours.
Mm-hmm. But these were structured houses. I heard that some of the government camps had platforms, and then you put tents.
That's the way a lot of them were. A lot of them were that way. Just had the... In fact, the Georgia had some out there where I was at. In fact, they moved boxcars in out onto Georgia. And my brother lived in a boxcar, made houses out of those, you know, regular refrigerated cars. They moved them out there, and that's the way they set a lot of permanent houses out there. In fact, he lived in one of the first ones they brought out. Brought a whole bunch of them. I guess the railroad got rid of them. They're old. And that's what he lived in out there.
How would you compare the way you lived, first in the bunkhouse and then in the house on the Georgia Ranch, with the way other farm workers lived? Do you think you were about average, or perhaps living a little bit better than a lot of them?
Well, once we got on the ranch, we just figured we had it made, you know. Because you figured, well, as you move on there, you've got a permanent job, you know, and you don't have to worry about anything. But otherwise, the people that didn't live on the ranch would, you know, they'd lay them off first, and ones that keep the ones that lived on the ranch here longer than would the rest of them. Of course, we was out of work quite a bit, but in different seasons, you know, in the winter time it was slow, and then a lot of times there was nothing to do. But the ones lived there, they tried to keep them pretty steady as they could.
But it was better than the bunkhouse, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
That's what she's trying to get to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember ever seeing any ditch camps where people were?
Any what?
Ditch camps, say under bridges or near ditches where there was water, where people would just sort of throw up tents or paper shacks or camp out in the open?
Well, that's what we did when we first come out. We lived under trees over there.
Do you remember seeing a congregation of people, a lot of people?
Not really, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. Uh-uh. No, they established that government camp. I told them my folks lived in a tent when they first come out, too. They moved in with me, and then they had a big old truck. Part of them live in it, and part of them would sleep with me until they got them a little old house. I don't know what they paid for it. And then I got them all jobs out there and things like that, and then they was pretty well settled, see.
You said that when you moved into the house under Georgia, you were married. And then you mentioned you were married in, what, 1936?
I got, what was this now?
You were married in 1936, is that right?
Yeah, 36 in September.
Mm-hmm.
We come out there in early spring.
And then you had children in...
37. My oldest daughter, yeah, was born in 37. Out of Kern General Hospital. That's where everybody was, you know, you'd take them at just kind of like relief deal. It didn't cost you nothing there. We'd go there. And in fact, my first two daughters was born during Kern General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They're on Flower Street. I think the second was born in 39. So my first two was born there. Then the war started. That's when I left. And
mm-hmm. How about doctor's care? Did your wife get any care from a doctor before the
children? If it did, it was from the county doctor. She'd go to the hospital. That's where she'd go for a checkup at the hospital. That's the only place. Mm-hmm. We didn't ever remember having a doctor bill. Of course, the Georgia had their own doctor out there, Dr. D. Smith. I remember when he come there carrying a little old suitcase. I thought that was a funny thing. He put his office out there, and he stayed there, I think, till he died. That's the only practice he ever had, was out there, and then he opened his own private office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. D. Smith was his name. I'll never forget him.
Mm-hmm. And did you see him? Did any member of your family?
See D. Smith?
To...
Oh, yeah. My mother and dad used to go to him when they come out there. Oh, all my family went to him. In fact, he's doctored me there on the ranch if I'd get sick or get a little hurt or anything. Oh yeah, he
did
was.
Did you pay him, or did Giorgio help with?
I never paid him a dime. It was all, I guess it was free. He doctored me. I never paid him nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Never sent me a bill even. So I guess if the Georgia paid him. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, he done outside practice too, and those people would pay him. But while I lived on the ranch, he doctored me. I never gave him a dime. He might have charged me, and I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Louise, that goes on the tape.
How did you hear about the Kern General and the fact that that wouldn't cost anything? Was this common knowledge?
Oh, just common knowledge. You just talk to people.
To that hospital?
Oh, yeah. The county hospital, everybody knew that. You didn't have money for a doctor, and you going to have any babies. Your wife just goes up there, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely.
When you or your wife had medical care at Kern General, then you found that the services were good and that everyone treated you fairly well?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I thought that was something because I wasn't used to anything like that, you know, something like that free. Usually we had to pay for everything, but we just go up there and doctor tend to her and had the baby stay with her. I think it'd stay 5 or 6 days in. Now they run you home the next day.
Mm-hmm. Because this was free, did you consider that a form of relief or aid or anything like that? Or?
Well, I hadn't really give it a thought. I just knew it was there and I was taking advantage of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I knew somebody had to pay the bill, but I don't know who. I guess we paid it in our taxes. Of course, I wasn't making enough to pay any taxes. You couldn't have, the doctor bill, I don't know what it would have been, but $10 a week, you couldn't have paid very much. Of course, we work on Saturdays. We'd make a little extra money, but there's no time and a half where I worked.
Mm-hmm.
There's all just straight time. I was probably in 37 when she was born. I was probably getting 30 cents an hour, 35. Was 25, and then every year you'd probably get a little nickel raise or something.
Some of the people who were Native Californians, or called themselves Native Californians here, criticized people who came and used the county hospital for free. Did you ever hear anything about that?
Never. In fact, if I did, I didn't realize it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Everyone you came into contact with them was very polite.
They would all... And everyone that I knew where it was around me, that's where they went. So they would be criticizing one another, you know.
Right.
But everybody there, that's where they go to hospital, mm-hmm. Kern General.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a bad winter or a slack season where you took some aid from the government, whether it was food or money or anything like that?
No, not after I was out there, but I'd go out and work on the side. I know when... spring or one fall it got slow, and me and my brother bought a couple of cotton sacks down at Arlen. Was going out to pick a little cotton. We got out the field and he looked at that cotton field. He said, "I didn't plant the damn stuff and I ain't gonna pick it." He took his sack back, Cheever's Variety Store in Arvin, got his money back, and I picked all day and didn't make enough pay from a sack. So he got his money. He was a little smarter than I was. There I worked all day and I had the sack and didn't pick any more and lost money. So that was the end of our cotton picking. We picked in Oakey a little, but out there we thought, well, there's nothing doing on the ranch, so we'll go down there and pick a little cotton. And he got his money, looked at the field, and went back. He said, "I didn't plant the damn stuff, and I'm not a picking it." He got his money back. I think sack probably cost $2, you know. Here I picked all day and didn't make enough to pay for my sack.
So when times got really tough, when there was no work, you just...
Oh, you just go out and work wherever you could get a little job, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just like I went over to Pass Robles, worked on that Army base at Camp Robert. And then wherever, anything you could do, if they didn't have work for it, if you lived there, they'd let you go out and work. You know, but usually if there was work and you lived on the ranch, but if you lived off the ranch, you'd just work where you want to, go from one job to the other. But where we lived there, it was...
Did you know very many people that had bad times and had to take some aid from the government?
No, not really, I didn't.
Was that something people would talk about if they did, or perhaps people would...
No, they, of course, like you said, they had the WPA, we worked on that, my dad did. In fact, I worked on it in CC camps, and we didn't think nothing of it, because it was a project and things that was to be done, we had to have some kind of money to get a living.
When you first moved out here, most of the people you came into contact with were like yourself and from Oklahoma or Texas.
Oh, yeah, most everybody.
But when you did come into contact with other people, say when you came into town to go to the stores or just other things like that, perhaps officials or something like that, did you ever have any problems with them?
No, they were. I got along good with them. They was all friendly to me. I just was that outgoing type anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'd see most of the people anyway that you seen was from back east. There just was that kind of people out here around Arvin, Lamont, and Weed Patch. It was just all drifters in there.
Mm-hmm. But when you did come in contact with people who weren't like that, you didn't have any problems?
Didn't have any trouble at all. I never did. Mm-hmm. I don't
did
know.
Did you hear about people who did have problems?
No. No. No, they everything seemed to work smooth where I was at. Different parts of the county or state, they could have been a little different. But there they depended, seemed like they depended on us to do their work. You know, they looked forward to that. Somebody had to do it. And them Okies coming out here, well, heck far, that was a good deal for us and it was good for them.
Mm-hmm.
They got their work done pretty cheap. Of course, I guess that was a going wage at the time. That was just the size of it.
When you first came out here, did you miss Oklahoma?
I went back a dozen times. Man, I hated this place. But I couldn't do nothing in Oklahoma. There's nothing to do. I'd go back. Well, I got to go back. It took me, three or four years before I even liked it out here at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just was a job, you know. And
this didn't feel like home then.
Oh, definitely not. No, we was used to. There was no trees here. Just big open wide space. We was there where you couldn't see for trees where we lived. Rolling hills like that, and trees, and it's just different country. Dry and humid here. Back there we had our rains and cyclones and storms. Well, lightning. But here you come out here 6 months, you wouldn't even see any rain. And that's what got me, is just a different climate, you know, change like that in the country. You can just see for miles here, and I don't know, it just wasn't home for me. It took me a long time to get adjusted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. After you got married out here, did you attend church?
No, that's where I got out of church, is when I come out here. I didn't. In fact, my letter for my church is still back there where I was baptized. My wife now has hers here, a letter, but I don't go to church anymore. I know I should, but I don't.
And you didn't then either?
Huh.
Did you ever have any contact with any of the schools? Your children were just born in, 36 and 39, so they wouldn't have been at school age. Do you ever remember hearing anything about the schools where the migrant children were?
Well, now, my children started school in Long Beach. See, I left here in 42. War started December 41, December 7th. Mm-hmm. So in 42, I went to Long Beach, and my children went to school in Long Beach.
Right.
And then after I moved back, they went to school, I left to Taft.
Mm-hmm. When you were here in the 30s, though, did you have any neighbors or friends that had children of school age that...
Well, my father and mother, I had brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
It was school age. Oh, yeah, they went to Bakersfield High. They went on a bus. That was only, in 38, there was only high school here.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you remember them talking very much about the school one way or another?
No, I really don't. Mm-hmm. See, I was married and wasn't home then. The young ones were home, but I was gone. So I really wouldn't hear them say too much about it.
Have you read The Grapes of Wrath or seen the movie?
I seen the movie of it. Yeah, John Steinbeck book.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's a lot of exaggeration, I think. A lot of it is true, but it's a general idea of way things went. It was just each family, you know, would come and they had to struggle to get by. And it was a lot of truth to the book, but he wrote the book to sell. I didn't see that. Then they made the movie, you know, and this and that. But that's far as I know about that at all.
Mm-hmm. You just thought there was some exaggeration.
Oh, definitely. A lot of it was. Yeah, and a lot of truth to it, too. Because I can see how we was and my folks, you know, when they come out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember any of the things that you thought weren't true about it?
Oh, I don't know. Really, I forgot a lot about it, but I did read it and seen everything about it. But really, I wouldn't know about all what he was talking about.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the word okie. Now people kind of use it in fun and in jest. They don't really mean anything, you know, terribly derogatory when they say it. But back in the 30s, it probably was a much more serious thing for someone to call you an okie. Do you think?
Well, it was for a lot of them would get mad and fight. But I always talk more about the okies than people out here. I'd call them dumb okies or this and that, you know. But I make fun of them more, and I'm from back there. I'm really one of them, but I make fun of them more than regular Sand Native would. I'd call them, well, you dumb okie or something like that, you know, just as a joke. Mm-hmm. And have a lot of fun.
How about in the 30s when people used to turn?
The same way. It didn't bother me. No, it didn't bother me at all, because most of the people I was in contact were from back there, and they'd joke amongst one another. But I imagine if some native or something would have come up and called me something like that, I would have probably knocked his block off. But guys that you know from there, and you know they're kidding, well, you take it for granted or to have fun. So I know a lot of guys I'd call, well, you dumb okie or something like that. Well, they know I'm an okie too, and they don't get mad.
Mm-hmm.
But you let a native or somebody like that, yeah, you probably had a fight on your hands.
You say you did hear about fights.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, but somebody that you know it's from back here and say that you don't bother you.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't me, because I know a lot of people that I've heard that expression ever since I come out here. Dumb okie, you know. But there were probably a lot of dumb ones, and a lot of them it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way here. I mean, anywhere you go, but it's just one of those things, the way the people looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't bother me.
Did you ever hear much about any discrimination against Okie? Other people might have told you of incidents where
no, not here where we was. I blended right in with a general population of people here, and I got along with them good. But oh, not for me, no. With some people, it could have been different. But of course, I went to school quite a bit, and I could talk their language if they could talk mine, and that was a difference. Of course, I probably talked a little funny, like all Okies did when they first come out. Maybe I still do.
Did you ever have any problems with that?
No, I never did. But you could, I could hear a person talk, and I could tell you if there's an Okie or not. You know, just the way they talk. Now, Louise's daughter, when she went to North High, she had trouble. She had that Okie talk, and she even had fights, didn't she?
Well, it is not fights.
Up in Hanford.
Oh, well, that wasn't over her, because she was an Okie.
Mm-hmm. But as far as you're concerned, you never...
Oh, I never did. Oh, no. I could I'd get along with a lot of people. Some people couldn't, but I don't know as I had a fight out there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Only in boxing matches and stuff like that, you know. We'd have things like that, wrestling matches. I'd get in those and everything like that, but mm-hmm. No fights.
For people that you heard about that did take offense to this and did get in fights, or felt sensitive that they were Okie, do you think that perhaps they were looking for trouble? Because you seem to who's
well, no.
And that's the way it was.
No, they wasn't looking for trouble, but they wasn't running from it either. I never seen Oki run from trouble at all. Everyone I've seen, if you corner him, he's going to fight. I mean, most of them, you know, they didn't take offense to, wouldn't let nobody get on them or like that. They would run. But they'd stand there, they'd hold their own. Or I always did, and I guess mm-hmm. the rest of them did too. Of course, a lot of times I didn't win, but I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough brothers and friends that could, you know, come to your aid or something like that. There was six of us boys, I think. So we didn't have any trouble like that.
Yeah. You mentioned several times that when World War II started, you moved down to Los Angeles area. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
When I went to Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was in 42 when the war started. My sister and her husband had already went down there, and he got a job in the shipyards. And he told me, he said, James, why work up there at the Georgian? Let's see. When the war started, it's probably paying 45 cents an hour, I imagine. And, of course, I was loading cars at the time. I was getting 70.
Mm-hmm.
Come on down there, and you can get, I forget what it paid now, $2 an hour. So, man, I thought that was big money. So he talked me, and I went down there and got a job at, in 42, the ward started in Cal Ship. So I worked over as a, got in the pipe fitters union. And I thought, well, I don't do better than this. So I went to welding school and took up welding. And so I got to be a welder. And then I said, well, I want a little more money than that. So I got to be a high pressure pipe welder. I paid 25 cents an hour more. So I was doing pretty good down there, making pretty good money for the times, you know, to what I was making to Georgia. I was making probably three times as much down there as I would to Georgia, but of course, house rent and everything like that was higher. Now, like this, my cousin that died the other day, I think he stayed out to Georgia till he retired. When little Joe went to his funeral, you know, little Joe to Georgia, I think he was out there 30 years till they sold out and then he had to quit. They sold that ranch to, I think, S.A. Camp. And I think that put him out of a job right there. He didn't have any pension. They didn't have any pension or nothing. When he retired, all he had was Social Security.
Well, he went to Kern High School District to work.
So then when you moved to L.A., you said you made a lot more, but then again it cost a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Were you... In the end, do you think you were any better?
Oh, I was way ahead. Oh, definitely. Yeah, it got me into another trade. I'd have stayed out there. Well, I would never know anything. Just old hard work is all. When I was loading cars, that was the hardest work I ever done. But here I could learn pipe fitting or welding, shipbuilding, or different trades, and that's what I was doing.
So in a sense, the war really helped you.
Oh, sure, definitely. It helped me. And then I was classified 3A. I was in defense, and I was married and had two children. In fact, my youngest daughter was born down there at Memorial Hospital in Long Beach, just about the time the war ended. The war is already over in 45. I think it ended in 45. She was born about then. And it was make more money down here, but I didn't like it down there, and just quick as the war's over, I come to Taft. My brother had his pipeline construction business.
Mm-hmm. Did the war affect you in any other ways? Were there members of your family that...
They all branched out and went into construction after the war started. Even my dad worked on a ranch over there, and he got in the carpenter's union. And he was a carpenter all his life, and then one of my other brothers got in the carpenter business, and he... carpentering all his life, you know. There's a lot of building going on,
mm-hmm.
government, army bases and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Did any members of your family fight?
My brother was on the B-52 bombers that bombed Japan all the time. He's over in Saipan, Tinian, I think, is where he was stationed. And he had all his missions in over Japan, bombing, and then he was home, I think, when the war was over. It makes so many missions, you get to come home on a furlough. I think he had all his missions. And he lives in Oildale. He's an operator.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't lose anyone?
I had lost a close cousin. He was a fighter bomber pilot. I lost a cousin. In fact, the Americans killed him. The Japs captured him after he got shot down, and he was taken to Japan. And the Americans bombed the ship he was on. And it was a Jap ship. They was taking him to prison camp. Yeah, I have a cousin right here who got captured. Well, he was a policeman. He got captured on Bataan. I think he was 3 or 4 years in prison camp. He's here in Bakersfield now, one of my first cousins. But as far as losing anyone, not in my immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
Just my one brother. Well, my younger brother was in Korean War, but they all come out of it safe. None of them got killed.
Mm-hmm. Then you say after the war you came right back to Kern County and attacked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't like it down in Long Beach. Too many people for me. I was used to a small place. And during the war, I had the blackouts. You had to have carpools, and you had so many tires. And if you drove to work, you had to get stamps to buy gas and this and that. And it was just too many people. And I come to Taft, and my brother, he had already started his own pipeline company. And that's come over there, and I was superintendent for him, done jobs everywhere, land pipeline. That was hard work, but I enjoyed it. Made good money.
Mm-hmm. And then did you continue to work with him until you retired?
20 years. I was there 20 years. And I belonged to pipe fitters in local 460 here in Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
Or in fact, old Younger is our lawyer for the union, So we wouldn't have him if he wasn't Democrat, that. He's one of them.
This is the second interview with James Lackey on Thursday, April 2nd, 1981 at 11 a.m.
Last time we were talking about when you worked on the DiGiorgio Ranch, and you said you lived there on the ranch in a home there.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that home? Describe it to me,
they had a little cabin here that about, there was two rooms, and they had them there for the workers, ones that they wanted to keep year-round, Of course, we didn't work year-round because a lot of slack period, but we lived there. It cost us $3 a month, like I told you,
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got water and electricity, and we had butane for heat, so it really wasn't that expensive. So, of course, we wasn't making much, and that's why they had a cheap rent. But if you rented, lived off the ranch, it cost you quite a bit more. This way, we could just walk right across to work. Didn't even have to buy gas or anything for the car, and everything was real, real simple.
And did you live with your brother there?
My brother had his own house.
You each had your own
house? Oh, yeah, we got married. We lived in a bunkhouse at first. I forget, bunkhouse, boarding room, dollar a day or something like that. And when we first went there, we wasn't married. So we lived in the bunkhouse. And after we got married, well, they decided they'd like for a stay, so they give us a house. That's where we got married when we was working there.
What was the bunkhouse like?
Oh, it's a big, big, long bunkhouse and had different rooms in it. You didn't lock your door. Nobody would steal anything or anything like that. And a whole bunch of guys lived in there in the bunkhouse, and then they had a mess hall where they had cooks. I think they had Japanese cooks or Chinaman cooks, and you would eat there at the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would eat together and go bring you in at noon on a truck, go there and eat, and then take you back out to work.
Mm-hmm. Was it fairly clean and pleasant?
Oh, definitely. Oh, it was nice. It was nice to me from what I was used to,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was real nice there. I liked to work there. You didn't make much, but didn't cost you much to live either.
Now, other people who worked on the ranch but weren't permanent hands had to find someplace else to live.
Oh, yeah, they would live at Weed Patch at the government camp. See, that was cheap there. Had this Weed Patch government camp. Most of the transit and people would live there, and it didn't cost them any more than it did me. Then some people at Lamont and places like that. Your whole family worked if they could, but they're big enough. Yeah, you'd see whole families would work because more kids they had and everything like that, more money they got. And that weed patch government camp there, well, whole families go out in the field, you know, some of them work, take the whole children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had been to that camp then at night for dances and cards and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about the camp? What
Not too much, just we'd go there every weekend, you know, Saturday night and Friday night. Well, we'd play cards and they'd have dances and that's about all there was around there.
Mm-hmm. Did you remember ever visiting anyone there? See what it was like
in their home? Oh yeah, we'd go into homes and play cards with different people that lived there. They work on the ranch, you know, and they'd invite you over and we'd go out to their homes.
What was their home like, honey?
Well, it's just regular old
room, straight
room. Yeah, just like it was anywhere else where we lived. Their homes no different from ours.
Mm-hmm. But these were structured houses. I heard that some of the government camps had platforms and then you put tents.
That's the way a lot of them were. A lot of them were that way. Just had the, in fact, the Georgia had some out there where I was at. In fact, they moved boxcars in out onto Georgia. And my brother lived in a boxcar. Made houses out of those, you know. Regular refrigerated cars. They moved them out there and that's the way they set a lot of permanent houses out there. He lived in one of the first ones they brought out. Well, a whole bunch of them, I guess the railroad got rid of them, they're old. And that's what he lived in out there.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare the way you lived, first in the bunkhouse and then in the house on the Georgia Ranch, with the way other farm workers lived? Do you think you were about average, or perhaps living a little bit better than a lot of them?
Well, once we got on the ranch, we just figured we had it made, you know. Because you figured, well, as you move on there, you've got a permanent job, you know, and you don't have to worry about anything. But otherwise, the people that didn't live on the ranch would, they'd lay them off first. And ones they'd keep the ones that lived on the ranch here longer than they would the rest of them. Of course, we was out of work quite a bit. But in different seasons, you know, in the wintertime, it was slow. And then a lot of times there was nothing to do. But the ones lived there, they tried to keep them pretty steady as they could. Oh, yeah.
That's what she's trying to get to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember ever seeing any ditch camps where people were...
Any what?
Ditch camps, say, under bridges or near ditches where there was water, where people would just sort of throw up tents or paper shacks or camp out in the open?
Well, that's what we did when we first come out. We lived under trees over there.
Do you remember seeing a congregation of people, a lot of people?
Not really. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. Uh-uh. No, they established that government camp. I thought my folks lived in a tent when they first come out, too. They moved in with me, and then they had a big old truck. Part of them would live in it, and part of them would sleep with me until they got them a little old house. I don't know what they paid for it. Then I got them all jobs out there and things like that, and then they was pretty well settled, see.
You said that when you moved into the house under Georgia, you were married. And then you mentioned you were married in, what, 1936?
I got, what was this now?
You were married in 1936, is that right?
Yeah, 36 in September.
Mm-hmm.
We come out there in early spring.
And then you had children in
37. My oldest daughter, yeah, was born in 37 out of Kern General Hospital. That's where everybody was, you know, you'd take them at just kind of like relief deal. You didn't cost you nothing there. We'd go there. And in fact, my first two daughters was born during Kern General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They're on Flower Street. I think the second was born in 39. So my first two was born there. Then the war started, that's when I left. And
how about doctor's care? Did your wife get any care from a doctor before?
If it did, it was from the county doctor. She'd go to the hospital. That's where she'd go for a checkup at the hospital. That's the only place. Mm-hmm. We didn't ever remember having a doctor bill. Of course, the Georgia had their own doctor out there, Dr. D. Smith. I remember when he come there carrying a little old suitcase. I thought that was a funny thing. He put his office out there, and he stayed there, I think, till he died. That's the only practice he ever had, was out there, and then he opened his own private office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. D. Smith was his name. I'll never forget him.
Mm-hmm. And did you see him? Did any members of your family
see D. Smith?
To...
Oh, yeah. My mother and dad used to go to him when they come out there. Oh, all my family went to him. In fact, he's doctored me there on the ranch if I'd get sick or get a little hurt or anything. Oh, yeah, he
did
was.
Did you pay him, or did Giorgio help with
him? I never paid him a dime. It was all, I guess it was free. He doctored me. I never paid him nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Never sent me a bill even. So I guess the Giorgio paid him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, he done outside practice too, and those people would pay him. But while I lived on the ranch, he doctored me. I never gave him a dime. He might have charged me, and I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Louise, that goes on the tape.
How did you hear about the Kern General and the fact that that wouldn't cost anything? Was this common knowledge?
Just common knowledge. You just talk to people.
To that hospital?
Oh, yeah. The county hospital. Everybody knew that. You didn't have money for a doctor, and you're going to have any babies. Your wife just goes up there, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely.
When you or your wife had medical care at Kern General, then you found that the services were good and that everyone treated you fairly well?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I thought that was something because I wasn't used to anything like that, you know, something like that free. Usually we had to pay for everything, but we just go up there and doctor tend to her and had the baby stay. Well, I think it stayed 5 or 6 days in. Now they run you home the next day.
Mm-hmm. Because this was free, did you consider that a form of relief or aid or anything like that? Or?
Well, I hadn't really give it a thought. I just knew it was there and I was taking advantage of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I knew somebody had to pay the bill, but I don't know who. I guess we paid it in our taxes. Of course, I wasn't making enough to pay any taxes. You couldn't have, the doctor bill, I don't know what it would have been, but $10 a week, you couldn't have paid very much. Of course, we work on Saturdays. We'd make a little extra money, but there's no time and a half where I worked.
Mm-hmm.
There's all just straight time. I was probably in 37 when she was born. I was probably getting 30 cents an hour, 35. Was 25, and then every year you'd probably get a little nickel raise or something.
Some of the people who were Native Californians, or called themselves Native Californians here, criticized people who came and used the county hospital for free. Did you ever hear anything about that?
Never. In fact, if I did, I didn't realize it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Everyone you came into contact with them was very polite.
They would all... And everyone that I knew where it was around me, that's where they went. So they would be criticizing one another, you know.
Right.
But everybody there, that's where they'd go to the hospital,
mm-hmm.
Kern General.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a bad winter or a slack season where you took some aid from the government, whether it was food or money or anything like that?
No, not after I was out there, but I'd go out and work on the side. I know when... spring or one fall it got slow, and me and my brother bought a couple of cotton sacks down at Arlen, was going out to pick a little cotton. We got out the field and he looked at that cotton field. He said, I didn't plant the damn stuff and I ain't going to pick it. He took his sack back, Cheever's Variety Store in Arlen, got his money back, and I picked all day and didn't make enough pay for my sack. So he got his money. He was a little smarter than I was. There I worked all day and I had the sack and didn't pick any more and lost money. So that was the end of our cotton picking. We picked in Oakey a little. But out there we thought, well, there's nothing doing on the ranch, so we'll go down there and pick a little cotton. And he got his money, looked at the field, and went back. He said, I didn't plant the damn stuff, and I'm not a-picking it. He got his money back. I think sack probably cost $2, you know. Here I picked all day and didn't make enough to pay for my sack.
So when times got really tough, when there was no work, you just...
Oh, you just go out and work wherever you could get a little job, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just like I went over to Pass Robles, worked on that Army base at Camp Robert. And then wherever, anything you could do, if they didn't have work for it, if you lived there, they'd let you go out and work. You know, but usually if there was work and you lived on the ranch, but if you lived off the ranch, you'd just work where you want to, go from one job to the other. But where we lived there, it was
Did you know very many people that had bad times and had to take some aid from the government?
No, not really. I didn't.
Was that something people would talk about if they did, or perhaps people would?
No. They, of course, like you said, they had the WPA. We worked on that. My dad did. In fact, I worked on it in CC camps, and we didn't think nothing of it because it was a project and things that was to be done. We had to have some kind of money to get a living.
Mm-hmm. When you first moved out here, most of the people you came into contact with were like yourself and from Oklahoma or Texas.
Oh, yeah, most everybody.
But when you did come into contact with other people, say when you came into town to go to the stores or just other things like that, perhaps officials or something like that, did you ever have any problems with them?
No, they were. I got along good with them. They was all friendly to me. I just was that outgoing type anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'd see most of the people anyway that you seen was from back east. It just was that kind of people out here around Arvin, Lamont, and Weed Patch. It was just all drifters in there.
Mm-hmm. But when you did come in contact with people who weren't like that, you didn't have any problems?
Didn't have any trouble at all. I never did. Mm-hmm. I don't
did
know.
Did you hear about people who did have problems?
No. No, they everything seemed to work smooth where I was at. Different parts of the county or state, they could have been a little different. But there, they depended, seemed like they depended on us to do their work. You know, they looked forward to that. Somebody had to do it. And them Okies coming out here, well, heck far, that was a good deal for us and it was good for them.
Mm-hmm.
They got their work done pretty cheap. Of course, I guess that was a going wage at the time. That was just the size of it.
When you first came out here, did you miss Oklahoma?
I went back a dozen times. Man, I hated this place. But I couldn't do nothing in Oklahoma. There's nothing to do. I'd go back. Well, I got to go back to California. It took me, three or four years before I even liked it out here at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just was a job, you know. And
this didn't feel like home then.
Oh, definitely not. No, we was used to. There was no trees here. Just big open wide space. We was there where you couldn't see for trees where we lived. Rolling hills like that, and trees, and it's just different country. Dry and humid here. Back there we had our rains and cyclones and storms. Well, lightning. But here you come out here 6 months, you wouldn't even see any rain. And that's what got me, is just a different climate, you know, change like that in the country. You can just see for miles here, and I don't know, it just wasn't home for me. It took me a long time to get adjusted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. After you got married out here, did you attend church?
No, that's where I got out of church, is when I come out here. I didn't. In fact, my letter for my church is still back there where I was baptized. My wife now has hers here, a letter, but I don't go to church anymore. I know I should, but I don't.
And you didn't then either?
Huh.
Did you ever have any contact with any of the schools? Your children were just born in, 36 and 39, so they wouldn't have been at school age. Do you ever remember hearing anything about the schools where the migrant children were?
Well, now, my children started school in Long Beach. See, I left here in 42. War started December 41, December 7th. Mm-hmm. So in 42, I went to Long Beach. My children went to school in Long Beach.
Right.
And then after I moved back, they went to school. I left to Taft.
Mm-hmm. When you were here in the 30s, though, did you have any neighbors or friends that had children of school age that...
Well, my father and mother, I had brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
It was school age. Oh, yeah, they went to Bakersfield High. They went on a bus. That was only, in 38, there was only high school here.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you remember them talking very much about the school one way or another?
No, I really don't. Mm-hmm. See, I was married and wasn't home then. The young ones were home, but I was gone. So I really wouldn't hear them say
right.
too much about it.
Mm-hmm. Have you read The Grapes of Wrath or seen the movie?
Oh, yeah, I've seen the movie of it. Yeah, John Steinbeck book.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's a lot of exaggeration, I think. A lot of it is true, but it's a general idea of what the way things went. It was just each family, you know, would come, and it was they had to struggle to get by. And there was a lot of truth to the book, but he wrote the book to sell. I didn't see that. And then they made the movie, you know, and this and that. But that's as far as I know about that at all.
Mm-hmm. You just thought there was some exaggeration.
Oh, definitely. A lot of it was. Yeah, a lot of truth to it, too. Because I can see how we was and my folks, you know, when they come out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember any of the things that you thought weren't true about it?
Oh, I don't know that. Really, I forgot a lot about it, but I did read it and seen everything about it. But really, I wouldn't know about all what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the word okie. Now people kind of use it in fun and in jest. They don't really mean anything. You know, terribly derogatory when they say it. But back in the 30s, it probably was much more a serious thing for someone to call you an okie. Do you think?
Well, it was for a lot of them would get mad and fight. But I always talk more about the okies than people out here. I'd call them dumb okies or this and that, you know. But I make fun of them more, and I'm from back there. I'm really one of them, but I make fun of them more than regular, say, a native would. I'd call them, well, you dumb Okie or something like that, you know, just as a joke, mm-hmm. and have a lot of fun.
How about but, in the 30s when people used to turn
it? Same way. It didn't bother me. No, it didn't bother me at all, because most of the people I was in contact were from back there, and they'd joke amongst one another. But I imagine if some native or something would have come up and called me something like that, I would have probably knocked his block off. But guys that you know from there, is, and you know they're kidding, well, you take it for granted or to have fun. So I know a lot of guys I'd call, well, you dumb Okie or something like that. Well, they know I'm an Okie too, and they don't get mad.
Mm-hmm.
But you let a native or somebody like that, yeah, you probably had a fight on your hands.
You say you did hear about fights.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, but somebody that you know it's from back here and say that you don't bother you.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't me, because I know a lot of people that I've heard that expression ever since I come out here. Dumb Okie, you know. But there were probably a lot of dumb ones, and a lot of them it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way here. I mean, anywhere you go, but it's just one of those things, the way the people looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't bother me.
Did you ever hear much about any discrimination against Okie? Other people might have told you of incidents where
no, not here where we was. I blended right in with a general population of people here, and I got along with them good. But oh, not for me, no. With some people, it could have been different. Of course, I went to school quite a bit, and I could talk their language if they could talk mine, and that was a
mm-hmm.
was a different course. I probably talked a little funny, like all Okies did when they first come out. Maybe I still do.
Did you ever have any problems with that?
No, I never did. But you could, I could hear a person talk, and I could tell you if there's an Okie or not. You know, just
the
way they talk. Now, Louise's daughter, when she went to North High, she had trouble. She had that Okie talk, and she even had fights, didn't she?
Well, it is not fights.
Up in Hanford.
Oh, well, that wasn't over her, because she was an Okie. That was just some honorary kids in school.
Mm-hmm. But as far as you're concerned, you never...
Oh, I never did. Oh, no, no. I could I get along with a lot of people. Some people couldn't, but I don't know as I had a fight out there at all. Mm-hmm. Only in boxing matches and stuff like that, you know, we'd have things like that, wrestling matches, I'd get in those and everything like that, but mm-hmm. no fights.
For people that you heard about that did take offense to this and did get in fights or felt sensitive that they were enough, do you think that perhaps they were looking for trouble? Because you seem to that's the way it was.
No, they wasn't looking for trouble, but they wasn't running from it either. I never seen Oki run from trouble at all. Everyone I've seen, if you cornered him, he's going to fight. I mean, most of them, you know, they didn't take offense to, wouldn't let nobody get on them or anything like that. They would run. But they'd stand there, they'd hold their own. Or I always did, and I guess mm-hmm. the rest of them did too. Of course, a lot of times I didn't win, but I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough brothers and friends that could, you know, come to your aid or something like that. There was six of us boys, I think. So we didn't have any trouble like that.
Yeah. You mentioned several times that when World War II started, you moved down to Los Angeles area. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
When I went to Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was in 42 when the war started. My sister and her husband had already went down there, and he got a job in the shipyards. And he told me, he said, James, why work up there at the Georgian? Let's see. When the war started, it's probably paying 45 cents an hour, I imagine. And, of course, I was loading cars at the time. I was getting 70.
Mm-hmm.
Come on down there, and you can get, I forget what it paid now, $2 an hour. So, man, I thought that was big money. So he talked me, and I went down there and got a job at, in 42, the war started in Cal Ship. So I worked over as a, got in the pipe fitters union. And I thought, well, I don't do better than this. So I went to welding school and took up welding. And so I got to be a welder. And then I said, well, I want a little more money than that. So I got to be a high pressure pipe welder. I paid 25 cents an hour more. So I was doing pretty good down there and making pretty good money for the times, you know, to what I was making to Georgia. I was making probably three times as much down there as I would to Georgia, but of course, house rent and everything like that was higher. Now, like this, my cousin that died the other day, I think he stayed out to Georgia till he retired. When little Joe went to his funeral, you know, little Joe to Georgia, I think he was out there 30 years till they sold out and then he had to quit. They sold that ranch to, I think, S.A. Camp. And I think that put him out of a job right there. He didn't have any pension. They didn't have any pension or nothing. When he retired, all he had was Social Security.
Well, he went to Kern High School District to work.
So then when you moved to L.A., you said you made a lot more, but then again it cost a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Were you... In the end, do you think you were any better?
Oh, I was way ahead. Oh, definitely. Yeah, it got me into another trade. I'd have stayed out there. Well, I would never know anything. Just old hard work is all. When I was loading cars, that was the hardest work I ever done. But here I could learn pipe fitting or welding, shipbuilding, or different trades, and that's what I was doing.
So in a sense, the war really helped you.
Oh, sure. Definitely. It helped me. And then I was classified 3A. I was in defense, and I was married and had two children. In fact, my youngest daughter was born down there at Memorial Hospital in Long Beach, just about the time the war ended. The war is already over in 45. I think it ended in 45. She was born about then. And it was make more money down here, but I didn't like it down there, and just quick as the war's over, I come to Taft. My brother had his pipeline construction business.
Mm-hmm. Did the war affect you in any other ways? Were there members of your family that...
They all branched out and went into construction after the war started. Even my dad worked on a ranch over there, and he got in the carpenter's union. He was a carpenter all his life, and then one of my other brothers got in the carpenter business, and he... carpentering all his life, you know. There's a lot of building going on.
Mm-hmm.
Government army bases and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Did any members of your family fight?
Oh, yeah. My brother was on a B-52 bombers that bombed Japan all the time. He's over in Saipan, Tinian, I think, is where he was stationed. And he had all his missions in over Japan, bombing, and then he was home, I think, when the war was over. It makes so many missions, you get to come home on a furlough. I think he had all his missions. And he lives in Oldale. He's an operator.
So you didn't lose anyone close to you?
I had lost a close cousin. He was a fighter bomber pilot. I lost a cousin. In fact, the Americans killed him. The Japs captured him after he got shot down, and he was taken to Japan. And the Americans bombed the ship he was on. And it was a Jap ship. They was taking him to prison camp. Yeah, I have a cousin right here who got captured. Well, he was a policeman. He got captured on Bataan. I think he was 3 or 4 years in prison camp. He's here in Bakersfield now, one of my first cousins. But as far as losing anyone, not in my immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
Just my one brother. Well, my younger brother was in Korean War, but they all come out of it safe. None of them got killed.
Then you say after the war you came right back to Kern County and attacked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't like it down in Long Beach. Too many people for me. I was used to a small place. And during the war, I had the blackouts. You had to have carpools, and you had so many tires. And if you drove to work, you had to get stamps to buy gas and this and that. And it was just too many people. And I come to Taft, and my brother, he had already started his own pipeline company, and that's come over there, and I was superintendent for him, done jobs everywhere, land pipeline. That was hard work, but I enjoyed it. Made good money.
Mm-hmm. And then did you continue to work with him until you retired?
20 years. I was there 20 years. And I belonged to pipe fitters in local 460 here in Bakersfield. Or in fact, old Younger is our lawyer for the union, So we wouldn't have him if he wasn't Democrat, He's one of them